You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. Shannon Gates here, getting you ready for the Australian Survivor podcast for week 5. So let me give you the show notes of what we've got for you. We have a huge recap with Rob Cicino himself. So much fun. Have to check that one out. Then 2 hours and 9 minutes in, we'll be talking to, spoiler alert, but really you shouldn't be here if you're going to be spoiled, but we're going to be talking to Matt. 2 hours and 23 minutes in, we're going to be talking to Ross. And 2 hours and 40 minutes in, we will be talking to Andy. So those are the show notes. Skip around to what you want to hear. Really hope you enjoy the show. Thanks so much for checking it out, and I will see you on the other side. Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about week 5, which is episodes 12 to 14. That is so much Survivor. That has caught up to Survivor SA, which has been going since May. You have to understand how insane I find that. But to talk about this amazing week, another great week of what is becoming and what has cemented itself, I think, as a super fun season, I have a person who is really the reason we're all here and the godfather of podcasting, or as he is otherwise known, the perfume scorpion.
Don't try to label that name on me.
It was Rob
Dirty Cicino, Shannon. Yes.
I like there's something about Shannon. I mean, what about the nicknames this season? There's way too much.
Too many nicknames. Why? How many nicknames are there? I didn't notice.
Well, okay. So you've got Roscoe. Is that like a nickname, or is just that just his name?
I don't know. They call him Ross and Roscoe. I thought that maybe maybe Roscoe is his formal name. Did you ask him in the exit interview?
You know what? We didn't have time for that. We spent a lot on Harry's socks, and then yeah. You know, so that was mainly what we were talking about. I don't know, but Purple Simon, is that a nickname?
They called him that on the island.
Yeah, but the perfume scorpion, that's what Janine's done. That's a really bad nickname. I mean, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
No.
It's terrible. I mean, it's much longer than Janine. So, yeah.
Luke has a lot of nicknames. King of the Jungle.
Lukey. Also not Lukey. Really a nickname. I'm not good at the nicknames.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Shannon. I'm so excited to talk about Australian Survivor. Now, this is really wild for me because if we're talking about episode 14 of a U.S. season of Survivor, that's the finale. We hit the merge this week.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I mean, also our episodes are much longer. So we're much in excess of a U.S. Survivor season. When I asked you on for week 5, I bet you didn't expect to be talking about episode 14. Well, you know what? If you have regrets, you made a commitment and you're here now. So thank you for that.
It's been a wild week because I was going to be on this podcast, and this was the one that was a little bit more of like, OK, we're going to do a little bit later in the season, but also that I had been I had also said I was going to do the Bachelor in Paradise podcast. At the start of the season, and that got pushed. And so I ended up having to, in the last, you know, basically 72 hours, I've watched 12 hours of Bachelor in Paradise and almost all of Australian Survivor this season. So ask me anything. I'm ready.
That makes me so concerned for you. Is there enough time in the last couple of days to have done that?
Like, no.
That, yeah.
No, there's not. I've done nothing else since Sunday night's Big Brother. I've done almost nothing else except Australian Survivor and Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah. And okay. So the premiere of Australian Survivor was exactly 4 weeks ago tonight. 28 days ago, and we've had 14 episodes, and I'm struggling. Like, I'm drowning. I can't keep up. I don't know how you did it in 2 days.
Well, that there's a lot of just clearing out the rest of my schedule. I'm sure you had like a more productive last couple of days.
No, not really, actually. But I mean, that's on me. I mean, are you enjoying the season at least now that you've like, gone into a hole to watch it?
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit slow in the early going. But, you know, I think that what's really fun about Australian Survivor is that a lot of times, you know, that they build up the stars and the long pre-merge, I think, really does help. And for whatever reason, a ton of idols in the pre-merge, I feel like it just ends up working so well, where I know in the U.S. Survivor, we have so much idol fatigue and, you know, that I think it gets sort of like exacerbated by Twitter, like, oh, enough idols, enough twists. But there's a lot of idols, and then the people who are like the big stars of the show tend to get the idols. And I don't know if I'm just like such a casual, but, you know, when it's Luke and David playing idols and Harry, I'm like, yes, stay, get rid of, keep dunking on the no name characters that I don't care about. Like, and I'm so nervous that my favorites are going to go home at these tribal councils. And I wasn't spoiled on anything other than that the season was really fun. And so I don't know, Shannon, do you mind all of the idols in the pre-merge in Australian Survivor?
Well, this sounds like a trick question because everyone knows I hate idols.
Yes.
Two of the idols were temporary, so that helps, I think. I mean, look, at the moment, just by the way that it's gone, there's actually only one idol in the game that David has, which is crazy. I mean, they're just getting played so much and then found so much. I enjoy some of the ways. Yes. I enjoy some of the ways that Australia is working with the idols compared to the US. So I loved the switch idol. Obviously, it went in a different direction than what the show would have thought, just because David is a crazy person. But that was like my favorite long-term idol storyline in I can't even remember how long. Like, it was not just about the idol. It was about the betrayal. That's what I enjoy about advantages and idols, is when it becomes about how can the players use them? How can we elevate the players rather than becoming so like focused on that actual advantage? And then I enjoyed how they found it at the popcorn reward. So I've enjoyed how they've done it around the idols. And I'm also happy there's only one in the game because I don't want too much.
I feel like in the U.S. Survivor that there is a lot of, hey, found an idol. Okay, put it in my pocket. And then the idols start coming out later on in the game. But I think that it's been really fun because I think that a long pre-merge can be tedious, and it has not been in this season. And I think that what Australian Survivor, and I'm not sure if they ended up doing it in season 3 at all, but they've stayed away from 3 tribes. Did they go to 3 tribes in season 3? They stayed away from 3 tribes. And I think that 3 tribes it's an underreported story. 3 tribes is bad. Two tribes is good. Keep them in 2 tribes for a really long time. And I feel like that's sort of like the heroes versus villains. Like, one swap is fine. Like, big tribes, 2 tribes. You could swap them once and then let it play out in the swap also. And especially where we kept seeing, you know, that the champions tribe kept going to tribal council, but they kept like, it was people that we didn't care about kept going, with all due respect. but they're probably not listening, right? Still, already got voted out. People kept getting voted out that we didn't care about, and you know, that it was really, we got to really see a lot of that group, and the idols I think were exciting in the pre-merge. I feel like that when it gets to a point where everybody has an idol and it's the final 6 and 7 and stuff like that, that's where I know that we've had a lot of problems in the U.S. Survivor between Advantage Get In. And, you know, there were so many complaints with Ben and Rick Devins, and, you know, even like Dominic and Wendell both had idols. And so it sort of feels like it's a traffic jam at the end of the game. But in the pre-merge, I thought this was so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the idols have been played a lot more offensively than defensively, and maybe that speaks to where, you know, we are in terms of the timeline of the game. Even David and Luke were really on the back foot at the Hannah Tribal Council, to remind you who Hannah was, but they were still using it offensively to try to take out Sean. So I think it's just been more like, you know, guns firing rather than using them as these shields that you hold on to, or just play and find. I think that's what I find pretty monotonous about the idols. But with these huge tribes in the pre-merge, and it works so well for season 2, 2, one of my favorite seasons as well. It just sort of often feels like concurrent merges. And that, I totally take your point about heroes versus villains, because like that villains tribe, that was a merge, you know. And what we've seen in this season is huge swings. I mean, in episode 3, in episode 7, there were little game-changing swings, you know, from the swap tribe with David and Luke, you know, with the against the sporty 7. These are things usually saved for post-merge. But with these big tribes, you got to start playing often early. You know, last season was different. Maybe due to the casting, it was way slower to start. But if you have a good cast, you can make a lot of dynamics happen with 12 people. I think that's why it's been so interesting.
Yeah, and just to double down on the three tribes thing, then you don't have that. You know, you get one good tribal council when there's 6, but then after that, then it gets really boring. You're sort of, you know, have to divide your attention between the three tribes, because you're probably going to visit all of them at least once in the episode, especially also
for it though, but
42
yeah.
minutes only to be able to do that. Whereas, that, you know, yes, you might have some people who might get a little bit more lost in the shuffle, but I feel like that the overall storyline of the two tribes, I feel like, does not get lost in the shuffle. And so you're more invested in what's going on with those two groups, as opposed to, oh, this tribe, I don't really care about them.
Yeah, and I know that you often judge seasons by how good they are based on, like, how much did I enjoy every episode, which I feel like is impossible to do for Australian Survivor. Like, there's a lot more fat that you can cut out. You know, it's not as tight. Like, if we just had the Ross getting medevaced episode for this whole week, that would have sucked. But instead, you have a whole fun week. So the way that I kind of look back at these long pre-merges or merges for Australian Survivor is, like, what storylines are really fun, like you're saying. And I just think that, you know, this season we're going to look back on, like, David and Luke surviving this pre-merge. I think that's going to be, like, the thing that remains in our minds. And there's a lot of things attached to it. You know, obviously the fake idols we were talking about and these massive swings and the popcorn, like, reward, all so many fun things of the pre-merge were about these two huge characters. I honestly believe one of the best duos ever. There's me being hyperbolic again. Someone put it on TV. But, like, I really think that's what we're going to remember about it. And it's, like, it's an all-time storyline. That is so much fun to watch.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. I could go on and on about Luke and David. I think with just to start with Luke, I was concerned coming into this season of the format of one returnee and all first time players. I think that's sort of like a universally hated concept among reality TV fans. I know that you're not a Big Brother person, but a couple of summers ago that was the season of Big Brother, where, hey, let's bring back one of our most popular guys, Paul. And he didn't win, but he was, you know, super popular, fan favorite. Let's bring him back. And by the end of the season, he was almost universally hated because it was him just running everything. And he became such a front runner. And he ultimately lost the game with a bitter jury in the finale. But everybody ended up hating Paul because he was just shoved down our throats. And Luke, amazingly, has been able to avoid that. I feel like that if you were like Luke, I'm a casual. I have no idea what the people in the streets are saying by you, Shannon. But I have to imagine Luke is just as popular as ever. And he's been able to, because I think he's remained an underdog throughout this whole season, where I think that people love Luke as much as ever.
Yeah, people freaking love Luke. I mean, he's such a likable person in terms of, like, anyone you're going to bring back. Like, Luke just brings joy to the screen, honestly. I'm obviously a huge fan, but just in that premiere, it was like every confessional is fun. Every time he's on screen is enjoyable. So I think if you're going to bring back one person, like, he was a really good one. And then he just brings this kind of, like, maniacal energy. And they brought in other good casting around him, other strategic players that he somehow, you know, united with and then ran the pre-merge with, David being the major one.
Yes.
And I mean, thank God that Fun Alliance has been what has, you know, run things, because if it was a 47, the season would suck.
Yeah,
but it luckily
definitely would.
That did not happen.
And just to go back to your point on David, what a
crazy
godsend. he is amazing. He is, you know, absolutely my favorite on the show. And he gets more screen time than Luke. Somehow it's almost like if you just came in and it's like, okay, well, one of these players has been on the show before, you would think it was David. You would think that he was the returning player. And it's been so weird that Luke, who came back and you figured, okay, oh, well, you're going to get Luke shoved down your throat. He's going to be dominating everything. That Luke is sort of like in the passenger seat to David. Like David is more front and center with that pair. And I think that that has also helped Luke, where it's not just turned into the Luke show where you get tired of him. And so we have this new thing in David, and he has been so much fun. I was so nervous. I know we'll get to the episodes, but I was so nervous at that Merge Tribal Council that he was going home. And I was just like, David, play your idol. David, play your idol. He's so great. I have loved watching him on this show. And I have to see how the rest of this plays out for him.
Yeah. Okay. So now it's like Luke is Jericho and like David is Luke, which is great because I want Luke to win, obviously. But in saying that, I want to make a comparison for David because I used to compare Luke to Tony. I think just they were crazy unicorns. Yeah. They're actually really not that similar, I think, besides the insanity. But like David now to me is so Tony. And here's why. It's like Tony digs a hole for himself, you know, with terrible, terrible moves. But then he does so much well.
He also literally digs a hole for him. That is all, one of his terrible moves, is literally digging a hole.
Yeah, I mean, David could have a spy shack like in the popcorn, I think. But like Tony creates problems for himself that he is somehow still so good with, you know, creating this deficit for himself. And like David is the same thing. Like David makes it so hard for himself and he still somehow gets out of it, which is so entertaining to watch. They're obviously both like big braggadocious characters. The way people react to them and are like so anti them, but they're still around is very much like Tony. Like I think like David is probably the best player of the season, but he's also one of the worst players of the season, kind of like Tony.
Yeah, I saw DJ LaBelle Klein say this in the Facebook group, and it was something that I was already thinking about. But I feel like that David is closer to Tyson. And now, you know, Tyson has made, you know, has had some high highs and maybe one notable low moment along the way. But I feel like that they seem very similar. And but I used to say that about Luke also, that yes. I felt like that he's kind of like Tyson. So I feel like that there's some connective tissue with like on a scale of Tyson. Into Tony, where like there's like from like good Tyson to bad Tony, and I feel like that there's like a slider there between the two of them. But yeah, I feel like that if you could like sort of adjust the formula to come up with either of those guys.
Yeah, Luke and David are like this unstoppable, impossible force. Like you can see why they teamed up, and it's not just because, you know, David's been modeling with Sarah from Luke's season for many years. I did important research into David's modeling work for many hours, and this is how I commit to the show. But I can just see, like, between them, what they've accomplished.
Wait. So you're saying that they have a pregame connection?
I mean, I don't know. I just noticed while I was scrolling through my very important research into David's modeling career that it seems like he knows Sarah. I mean, this is like the least of the pregame connections, because considering the whole Sport47 had met. So they took what they could get, but they seem like
that's so
an intrinsic connection. Yeah.
I've always said about Survivor that the greatest asset that you can ever have is to find a person that you know you can trust them no matter what. It's the most powerful thing when you go back and look at the history of the show from, you know, Tina and Colby to, you know, Steven and JT and Malcolm and Denise. It's just like when you know you have that person that is not going to screw you over no matter what, it just gives you so much power. And, you know, we see that Luke and David have that. And, you know, there's never a second like, is Luke playing me? I don't know. That they trust each other. And there's so much confusion that it's just such a powerful thing. To even if it's just two people, to be able to have that. And you see it in Survivor, like when you get it with three people, then it's like a unstoppable force. But just with two, it's so powerful.
Yeah. And Luke knows because he had that with Jericho and it was a winning formula just for Jericho. But even Steven said in our first recap of the season, he was like, David might be shield for Luke. And I was like, but Luke can't be shielded, not Luke. And like legitimately, David has done it. How insane of a person, how big of a player must he be that he literally is the Luke to his Jericho. I mean, it's an incredible about face to watch. There are other characters on this season I think we should probably get to. I was going to do a quiz on how many of the contender women you could name, but I feel like I won't be that mean. I think let's just go back to the third last episode.
How many of the contender women? Like from the start?
Yeah. All of them.
I think I could name everybody now, but from the start, no chance.
That's impressive. That's quite impressive.
Well, I didn't actually do it. Yeah. So.
I won't put you on the spot. But I want to talk about, okay, we'll talk about some of the contender men who are doing some things and go back to the episode 12 with Harry and Matt, the episode where Matt goes home. This was really interesting to me because I thought they both did such a good job. They're working in really an impossible situation here, these two guys. They're trying to flip, you know, Ross and Simon, which I think probably, you know, was not really going to happen, but they offered them, you know, better numbers for Simon, such a good, like, appeal to Simon to work out he was on the bottom, to offer him a better spot. He's just someone who's just never going to flip, but I think that was the person to do it to. You know, they offer his socks. Ross was obsessed with Harry's socks. I still don't really understand why. And, you know.
Yeah. Was that like a Angelina jacket thing?
Yeah. Well, in speaking, you know, with Ross in our exit interview coming up after this, he had like burnt his socks. So he literally asked every person going home if he could have their socks. It's like what a horrible death, like with death warrant to get. Just like walking along and Ross asked you for your socks and you know you're going home that night. It's just a horrible way to find out.
Yeah.
But he didn't get the socks until the end, until he got medevaced. So were the socks cursed? TBD on that.
I don't know. Did he end up getting Matt's socks?
He ended up getting Harry's socks in the challenge and then he left with them. So considering he had an ankle injury, that's why I'm thinking.
Matt, can I have your socks, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a lot of similarities between Ross and Angelina. I feel like I'd be interested to see that, like, composite character. But, I mean, they both are probably a little mad. But, yeah, I mean, in this episode, I think what we saw for a lot of the pre-match, which was also interesting, it's not just Luke and David, but the Harry, Janine kind of battle was, I think, another really big part of the pre-merge. And we saw it here a lot. We obviously saw him make Janine play her idol. So he worried her quite a bit. And I think, even though he didn't really get a lot done, Matt still went home. I think Harry and Matt threw everything at the wall in this episode, and I was impressed by it.
Yeah, this week we spent more time with those with the contenders group and sort of like the inner workings of that show, which I feel like has been sort of like the undercard of the first half of the season, where, you know, everything going on with Luke and David was really sort of like the main event. And this was sort of like, you know, the storyline that was on the back burner and that sort of came into its own a little bit more this week. And the, you know, the Harry stuff is so interesting, where he has been, I feel like at times also really bad.
Yeah.
But
he made up a kid wrong. Like
it seems like it's worked. I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, he's at a point where we'll stick to the episode 12 stuff. But yeah, was that when they called him the cockroach that they need the I mean he found the idol and you know you end up seeing like the idols, you know, keep ending up in the hands of, you know, these players that really need them, and it was sort of like a dramatic idol find that he had, and he was doing the fake crying with with Roscoe to try to sell. I kind of felt like that they were onto something, and I felt like that they didn't go all in. Like I felt like that Matt seemed like kind of like passive aggressive with the rest of the tribe, and Harry was pushing. But I kind of felt like that they could have gone further with trying to push the men's alliance.
I mean, I feel like Harry doesn't do anything by half. Like he's not only going to appeal to Simon and Ross, he's also going to then find an idol, play the idol, fake cry for some reason. Like this is, you know, only from someone who can invent a fake child. And like Rob, you know, so many seasons of Survivor and we've never seen anyone invent a baby, probably for good reason. But like, how good is Australian Survivor?
Come on. I was going to tell you that Dominic and Anthony are not real either.
Yeah.
I'll come clean.
What would be the benefit of that? But also what was the benefit to Harry? So I guess it's the same thing. I can't believe that Harry invented a fake kid, and it's only like probably like the 10th most crazy thing that happened in the pre-merge. That's why it's so good. But I feel like since Oscar...
Well, could I just touch on Oscar for a second?
Yes.
It's not that he invented the fake kid. It's that when he came clean about, like we saw that tribal council where, as you very pointed out on last week's podcast of like, Yeah, why did they not realize nobody was going home in the tribal council where they bring both tribes in? Like, that's what they do on Australian Survivor. But Roscoe just says, like, hey, do you even have a kid? Like, I couldn't believe that he didn't be like, yeah, how dare you, Roscoe? Of course I have a kid.
How dare you say that about Oscar? I miss it.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, you're right. I made that up.
Right.
Like, what?
Right. Well, what I'm putting together in the tapestry of the Oscar storyline, we're talking about Oscar every week. He is the best player of the season. But what I'm putting together.
I give him my chiz point.
Yeah, don't, because that would be a mockery of the chizzy. But I understand what you're going for. I ask every person in the exit interview about Oscar at this point almost. And it seems like none of them believed him. I mean, okay, Rob, you have kids. So apparently Harry was saying that Oscar was saying just mama and dada, and Oscar was three. So it seems like Harry had not met a child. So this was the problem. It wasn't just that he invented the kid. It was also that, like, his lies were bad. Also, he's just like, he didn't tell them all at first that he had a kid. And then, like, a day or two later was like, yeah, I have a kid, by the way. Like, no parent would spend, you know, like, time with people and not mention they had a child. So
right,
it was the method in inventing.
Not convincing.
You know? Yes. And so everyone had kind of worked it out, like, pretty early on. So at that point, he, like, knew he had to come clean. Which is, yeah, I think since Oscar has left the building, Harry's gotten better. Like, maybe Oscar's, like, Harry's bad strategy component, and that, like, just now that that's gone, Harry, I think he was better this week, because last week it was like, yeah, all of his ideas kind of, like, worked in conflict with each other. And this week, while it didn't pay off, it was like it was all building to the same goal. And that's what I like from Harry in this week. Across the first two episodes of the week and the third episode, he, like, slipped into the background, which was amazing. So much better week for him. Now that, yeah, you know, and he's recovered genuinely from the fact that he made up a child for, like, 3 weeks in the game, which is impressive.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is, you were making this point last week. I think it was in regards to Andy's job when you were talking with Jackie on the podcast about lying about your occupation. But yeah, I think that it's almost like, yeah, once he did come clean about that he didn't really have a kid, that I think that he became a little bit more like, all right, he's a liar and a crazy person, but he's our liar and crazy person.
Yeah, Dirty Harry. Like, when you put a nickname to it.
Yeah,
Cockroach is another nickname as well. The Cockroach. Mm-hmm. What a wonder. Mm-hmm. That was, she was like, no offense, and I mean this as a compliment, but you are a cockroach.
You can survive anything.
Yeah, I guess compliments aren't like business, because Janine's not good at them. Like, I don't want to hear her insults because she called him a cockroach to compliment him. I'm enjoying what he's doing. I liked that he was honest, you know, with Ross about going for Pia. I guess they realized that they would definitely split the votes. I think this is something that has been complained about. And, you know, while I have loved the pre-merge, I think one of the biggest issues I've had with it is A, the uneven editing, where, like, so many people didn't get confessionals and whatever, but also just, like, misleading the viewer, because, like, right until tribal council, literally right before, they had Janine saying, we see no reason to split the vote, so we're not going to, which was obviously just a lie to the viewer, because they did split the vote. So mm-hmm. It would have made no sense for them ever not to split the vote. And I think Harry realized that. He knew that either he was going to flip them or he was going to lose Matt. He was honest with Ross, yeah, and Simon about the name. That's a genuine bond you can try and build going forward. It didn't work, but I really admired the attempt from him. And I guess maybe I'm just being super high on it because he's recovered from the whole fake Kate thing. But I did think he was good this week.
Can we touch on the uneven editing? Because I don't know if it bothers me. Like, I don't know necessarily. And I know that I hear it so much in the U.S. Survivor about how, you know, hey, everybody, we count the confessionals and, you know, what's up with that. And then, you know, you factor into, you know, other issues, I know that, like, Julia was talking about representation, this past season in the confessional count, but, that's not an issue here with, the Australian Survivor.
No minority getting confessionals.
But, yeah.
Haven't seen one of them yet.
No. But in terms of, like, the show tells us who's important and who we don't have to worry about. And yeah, like, I guess, you know, there's a lot of people that you write off, like, okay, well, they're not going to win, but is that even true on Australian Survivor? Because I feel like that I would have definitely said, all right, well, Christy's not going to win season one. But then she did. So I guess you don't need to have a big edit to win the game, right?
Christy actually did have a big edit. She was just like she had more confessionals than you'd think. She was just like a crazy person to win the game. But
I didn't say it.
But look, I Nicole said it. She told me before the podcast. But
yeah,
I mean, I think Australian Survivor, it's so hard to judge Australian Survivor of all the franchises against the US. Like, it's so different. Like, we're judging confessionals and screen time, and it's so much longer, which should give people the propensity to have more confessionals, obviously. But it's like more of a spectacle. I think, yeah, it's more repeated confessionals because maybe they, you know, the way that Australian TV works, maybe people aren't going to get to all three episodes every week. So maybe you need to hear the David and Luke stuff, or last year, the Benji stuff, over and over again in case you missed it. It's a very different way of storytelling. In terms of my enjoyment of the season, I think it has affected it a little bit. I mean, like, you want to kind of know who people are to a degree, to a small degree, before they go home. But at the same time, as we said, we're very much following storylines. That's how I see this whole season. You can't follow it by episode. You basically just have to assume you're watching Australian Survivor 24/7 and just ride that wave and watch that storyline play out. And the storylines themselves have been so fun and so concrete that people unfortunately fall by the wayside. I think they can do better with it, but I see the difference storytelling in Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I guess because you have such a long run of the show where, what is it going to end up being, like, what, like 24 episodes or something around there? Where
we're getting there Tuesday, though. So.
It'll be tomorrow. I do think they need to build up their stars more of the show, because you need to be coming back for week after week, where in the US Survivor, hey, we got 13 episodes. You know, there's like such a finite amount of screen time, and we got to be a little bit more even with how we distribute it, or people are going to be upset because, hey, it's episode 9 already and I haven't been on the show. Whereas here, I love seeing, you know, the people that are so much fun. And then I'm like happy when somebody that I don't know who they are gets voted out. I'm like, good. Oh, good. It wasn't one of my favorites. But I'm just a, you know, filthy casual of Australian Survivor.
Let me, like, same. Like, we have such a good merge cast. I mean, besides Simon, I really feel like the final, like, 14 were so stellar. And maybe that's unfair because I'm like, well, we lost.
And
like,
Abby.
Yeah, Abby's, she's got a plot to it. But yeah, she's one of the worst. Maybe the AFL players aren't as good. But, you know, it's unfair maybe to say we lost the duds early because I don't know who those people are. They might have been excellent, but I can't tell you that. I mean, I'm invested in the characters they made me invested in, and those people all made the merge. So those are the people you're going to root for. Like, I don't know. It's just much more of a spectacle. Some of the things I'm talking about here, and I don't know how you feel about this, is just like outright lying to the audience. I mean, US Survivor probably does do it a bit, but they're trying to create so many avenues and so much suspense. And it's like, are they going to split the vote? Like, just say, you know, are they going to flip? Are Ross and Simon going to flip? That's the question of the episode. But it also has to be, and are they going to split the votes? And these things that are obviously not accurate, because they did split the votes. Like, that was what was happening. So it's happened a few times, like the Hannah vote, for example, where everyone was confused because we hadn't even heard the possibility that Hannah would be the secondary split vote. So it becomes confusing from an audience perspective. You have to have some trust in the show that they're not, like, outright lying to you, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It's so hard because it's a TV product, but it's also a game. It's a hard thing. But I kind of do think that, like, I wish they wouldn't, like, lie to my face.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's wrong to expect.
Super dramatic, though. They really, it's very exciting. The music and like
the challenges, like, where people are getting injured and drowning. It's a lot.
Yeah, the challenge. I'll be honest. You know, I watch the challenge at accelerated speed.
Yeah, I mean, I know you hate blindfold challenges, and they had a challenge where they were blindfolded jumping into water.
Oh, terrifying. Terrifying.
And that's not where someone got injured, which is crazy. They got injured on a rope swing and not in, like, the many active drowning challenges. It's just crazy the way the world works.
Yeah, I'm not a challenge person, but lots of really unique challenge ideas, and the challenge department, I think, on Australian Survivor deserves a lot of credit, because the challenges have been very inventive. It's not just like recycled versions of stuff that they've already done. They're like, I feel like that they are constantly trying to reinvent these different ideas for challenges.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the challenges, because there's been a lot of challenge throwing, which at least adds some, like, strategic component to the challenges. So the first immunity challenge of this week, Andy is trying to throw. And this is an interesting part of this episode, because I think it makes sense. Like, it's a lot of, like, a lot of things with Andy. It's like, it makes sense in the numbers. It totally does. I think that the champions and the contenders kind of realize that the magic number at a merge of 13 or 12 was going to be 7. And they kind of realized that when they both had like 7-ish people left. So I feel like it made sense. But then again, with Andy, it's like, again, just it was relying on his relationships, because Baden doesn't end up throwing the challenge. And from what we've kind of heard online, Baden was saying that, you know, he hadn't realized, or there hadn't been like a consensus on whether they were going to throw it. Maybe, you know, Sean and Daisy did want to, but Baden hadn't gotten the all clear. So standing there on the mat with Andy, when Andy's like, we need to throw this, Baden doesn't trust that, because Andy's worked against them so many times. He doesn't trust Andy. So in the end, there was this like hilarious scene where Baden makes the puzzle around Andy, who Jonathan is calling out, everyone is calling out. And I mean, it was great entertainment. You talk about, you know, not being a challenge person. This is what makes the challenges fun.
Yeah. I thought that we were going to have both groups trying to simultaneously throw the challenge, because we ended up where you had the majority of the contenders on one tribe and the majority of the champions on the other tribe. And they were trying to like protect their people and vote out the remaining stragglers from the other alliance. And I thought that that might have been a really fun dynamic. But
yeah, I'm still confused about why they really didn't do that. Like, I try to get an answer out of Ross. That was difficult. I was like, why? Like, you just threw the last challenge to get rid of Casey, but your main target was Harry. Why are you still not throwing the challenge to get rid of Harry? I don't understand why we don't see more, like, follow-through on long-term challenge throws.
I don't know. Maybe they were just, you know, so concerned about, you know, him having idols or finding idols or being a cockroach or okay, we got, you know, let's not tempt fate. Like, we'll just vote him out at the merge when we have numbers.
Yeah, but I mean, the right move, I think, for both definitely was to be throwing it. I think Andy, again, had the right idea, but like, it's just about getting everyone on board with his ideas and having the relationships, which seemed to be the problem.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed Andy on this show. I know we're not talking about the merge yet, but I will miss Andy. I think that he was almost like a sitcom character. Where, you know, he was probably, you know, had a higher opinion of his gameplay than his gameplay actually merited. But I think that's what made him fun to watch. Of like, he came in saying, like, not only am I going to win the season, I'm also going to be the greatest player who ever played. Like, and that
win
was
the all winner, you know, season. Called, yeah. Shot.
Yeah, he's going to come back and he'll win other seasons. And that's just how good, like, he wasn't content to just, you know, get to the end and win this season. So he was very ambitious. And I like that. And he also had like sort of like a George Costanza-ish like quality to him, like all his ideas ended up like backfiring in some way, and it was great. It was so much fun to watch him on the show, and I think that he was like such a, you know, fun foil to David and to Luke also, once we got them all together, because he was, you know, he was always scheming, but they were like successfully scheming at times. And I loved Andy. I thought that he was really, really fun to have out there. And you always thought that there was a chance that, like, okay, here's the plan, here's how it's going to go, but then Andy's going to throw a monkey wrench into the plan, but then somehow it was going to end up like not going the way that Andy thought it was going to go. I really thought he was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that he was super fun. I'm also laughing because I'm remembering, just by you talking about his extreme ambition, kind of like, just, you know, play a good game first and then we'll work on the other stuff. And I'm just remembering the last time we were on a podcast and I said, you know, don't try to play a perfect game. Why don't you just play a regular game? And that was right before the finale of Edge of Extinction. And I said it about Chris Underwood. So I remember that as well. But I mean, I agree. Like,
that was the lesson he had to learn.
that you can't play perfect.
Maybe if Andy went to the Edge of Extinction, then he could like think that over.
I mean, yeah, if Edge of Extinction was on the season, I think Andy would win the season. He'd come back, he's great at challenges, and he'd find a couple of idols, and I do think that he would win. But I think
I would hate Edge of Extinction so much on this season, Shannon. I mean, let's go back and check out what Anastasia, Laura, Susie.
Okay, now you're just showing off. Now you're just showing off that you know.
I have the Wikipedia open.
Okay.
ET is doing.
Yeah, and you spent 30 minutes on it per episode. to spend all your time with these people.
Oh, Andy would be the star of The Edge of Extinction.
I mean, definitely. He's the best character that we've lost so far, I would think. This is why the season's been good, because Luke is the fifth craziest person on the season, which is theoretically insane. You've got someone who invented a child, Andy, who could never go with the simple vote, which I love to watch, David, and Ross. Crazy people.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun.
Just reading the names out, it's amazing that I could tell you almost nothing about all of the people that were voted out. And all the people who are in the game are so much fun. I think that Andy is like the first really great character that we've lost. All due respect to Matt and Ross also this
Ross?
Week. But
people love Ross.
Ross was fun. He was fine. He had some good lines.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not going to maybe get as big an edit if you get, you know, medivac'd right before the merge. And yeah, I think, yeah, Andy's the biggest loss. Because look at it. Everything he was doing was just so fun. I mean, this challenge throw, just watching Baden make the puzzle around him.
I thought he was
going to
knock the whole thing over with like his shoulder. I'm like, oh my God.
He tried to pull the PG in Jamie Dugan by like putting the piece, by throwing the pieces off. And Luke was like, you dropped a couple of pieces over there. Like, it didn't work.
Yeah. Luke and David were on him from like Easter on the challenge.
Even Jonathan was like, Andy, you know, Jonathan often says too much. I feel like Andy clearly throwing this challenge. Like he basically could have said that, which was amazing. Yeah. So interesting. And I noticed the next episode in the challenge where Ross gets medivac'd, they're like, Who's sitting out? And David's like, Andy. And they're like, yep. So just immediately sent him out of the challenge. We're not letting that happen again. So
yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't want to risk it. Shannon, can I ask you to go back with Andy and the previous? I know it was on last week's podcast, but I would just that I need you to hold my hand and just talk me through it just a little bit, if you don't mind, for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything super negative about Andy.
So. No, I'm confused because that I thought that Andy was trying to do right by Luke and David at that previous vote where he was saying like, hey, play your idols, but let's the three of us vote for Daisy. But then it was very confusing because they didn't, after the tribal council was over, they showed the tiebreak votes for when it was between who is it between
Hannah and
Sean. But if Luke and David listened to Andy, would Daisy have gone home?
Yes. The problem with what Luke and David had with Andy, and one of the major reasons they sent him home at the merge, I loved at the merge, it was just like a montage of all the lies Andy had told coming back to bite him, like to the challenge throw, they didn't believe that he wasn't throwing it, and John was so offended that he'd thrown a challenge, and he said that to Simon, who's also thrown a challenge, which I found really funny. But this was a major issue that I had with it last week, because it really did come back to bite him. He lied to the contenders, he betrayed them, but he also did lie to Luke and David, because he told them the votes were being split on Luke and David, not on David and Hannah. If he told them the truth, they could have just put their votes on Hannah, saved, you know, Luke's idol, and that would have worked out. So he was trying to play all the sides, depower Luke and David by flushing their idols, but also kind of work with them to take out Daisy, who he didn't trust. So he was kind of working with, I guess, everyone, but also no one. So I think they were probably pissed off that they, you know, saw him as the reason for giving them bad intel that Luke wasted an idol. And that's what they were upset about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just really confused about he came to them and he's like, hey, this is the most real conversation we're going to have in the entire game.
But it wasn't.
And
real. I was like, spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah. So and then they didn't show you the votes, and the previously ons made it seem like that tribal council was David and Luke dunking on everybody else. For a couple episodes, they're like, then at the tribal council, it was David and Luke, and they played their idols to stay in the game. It's like, well, I don't think that's exactly how it went down.
No, I mean, that tribal council was Sean being a step ahead and splitting the votes on Hannah, which was really smart because he thought Luke might have an idol, which he did, which was brilliant. And, you know, it's hard because it's like, yes, if Andy and David and Luke had all voted together, then whoever they voted for, Sean or Daisy, whoever they decided on, would have won out. But there's mistrust there because there's broken information, like specifically actually purposely bad information. We see also in the merge that David says that he doesn't like that Andy's giving him a lot of like last minute information, which is what he did there.
Right.
So it's like it's the approach and then also, you know, tricking them with some of the information that I think, and, you know, we'll talk about the merge, and I guess we can talk about the merge. We want to talk about a bit about Ross, but we can circle back. But I think that that was the issue, is that all of these things, like the approach and the relationships, are what came back to hurt Andy. Because at a merge of 12, big merge, lot of people, you don't want it to be you. And that was someone that pretty much everyone could agree on, because he didn't have anyone in the game at that point who could vouch for him.
Yeah. I was surprised that it ended up being Andy on such a lopsided vote when we got to the merge. I really thought, you know, they kept talking about tribal lines, and we didn't really see any sort of like, common ground for the two groups. And I was surprised that the contenders, where it was going to be a 6-6 vote, would sacrifice one of their numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the champions got very lucky that Sean won immunity, because I think David, being a bit, you know, obviously having that huge, huge competitive thing with Sean, would have gone for Sean. And I think the contenders would have rallied around Sean. He seems like their, like, spiritual center. He really, I mean, he unified them when he came back to that tribe. He's big for them. And I think they would have rallied around him. But Andy,
he's big for everybody.
Yes, he's horse. But are you going to go to rocks for Andy? Think about, like, how much Andy has betrayed them in, like, only really four tribal councils. You know, they voted against each other. He was on the opposite side of Baden, Daisy, and John when they voted against him. Then he betrayed them at the Hannah vote. Like, really not a lot of love there. And, you know, Daisy's the one with the idol who could possibly save him. And he just put her name down. Like, she's not going to do that. She said, I don't even want Andy to be there. So I think that for, like, some of the biggest threats, I think Harry and Sean seem to want to keep Andy around, but they were overpowered. Daisy is someone who could go soon, but she wasn't, you know, Andy wasn't a good rallying force for the six in the way that Sean might have been. And then, you know, someone like a Baden as well is probably, he's got his own inroads. He's probably got his own things happening with the champions, with Luke. So I feel like they all kind of had their reasons, or they just didn't have the numbers. And also, I mean, good on Luke and David for picking the perfect target in Andy and just kind of strong arming that merge vote.
Yeah, and then also that they, for as much as Sean does not like David, I think that they really were able to, you know, put the poison in their ears about how, hey, Andy was trying to get us to vote you guys out. Just remember that, you know, Andy is not loyal. And then it
but
came
he was
up
doing
the tribal
that. Like,
council.
He literally, we did try to get them to vote Daisy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that Andy certainly like picked the wrong target in terms of when Sean came back over, that he felt like that hey, like, I'll destabilize this if we can break up Sean and Daisy. So I think also that Sean had the relationship with Janine and the godmother's
poisoned
stepsisters. So he kind of had the relationship with those three women from over there, so that there wasn't like a good target from the contenders for them to put the votes on, from the champions, the former champions, to put their votes on
Luke.
Either.
But like, everyone just loves Luke, and then Luke has connections with Baden, and he's also hanging with all the contenders. So
yeah,
it's about how many connections you have. I think like A, in your original tribe, like how many people will rally around you. Like, I think they would have gone to bat for Luke. The champions, for example, weren't turning on someone like a Luke or probably any of them, except maybe David, who has an idol. And then it's also like how many connections you have across the aisle, because I was kind of surprised that it was Andy and not someone like a Harry. But then, I mean, we can talk about this from the previous episode where obviously Ross gets evacuated. We don't really get to see what was happening. But from what we can tell, it seems like the women wanted to work with Harry. And I mean, I don't understand that. Do you understand this? I mean, you've watched
it. I don't understand it either. And, you know, Harry has really done everything to, you know, make enemies out of them, and somehow Janine just had a turnaround of like, he's won me over.
Yeah,
okay. I'm gonna work with him.
Well, this is what confused me. So it's like, let's throw David under the bus and tell Sean about his fake idol. Okay, now yeah. David's been thrown under the bus. Let's throw challenges to save David and take out Harry. Okay, Harry can't go home. Let's work with Harry and take out Simon. Like, none of those things make sense. And, like, maybe it's an editing thing. I think we give a lot of credibility to these women because we know they're smart. We know they're good players. Like, they're clearly smart women. But I have to go by what I'm seeing on my screen. I saw a conversation between those three women. I mean, I understand, like, when you have a conversation with Harry, that makes a lot of sense. He might play an idol. Definitely bring him in. Ross might be evacuated. Definitely bring him in. Definitely try to work with him at the merge. You know, and if you're going to say maybe they should throw a vote on Simon in case Harry plays an idol, I get that too. Not like Simon's going to shake up the game in any extreme way if you do that to him. But I saw a conversation between these three women. Abby didn't like it, but especially Pierre and Janine were like, we're going to blindside Simon. We're going to throw our votes collective on him. It's in confessional. It's in a private conversation. Like, I have to take that as legitimate. As I've said, sometimes I don't trust what the show is telling me, but I have to take that as legitimate. It was definitely at this time. It was definitely when Ross was out being examined because they make mention of that. It doesn't really make much sense, especially because Simon is the person you most want in the game. Like, he's never going to flip on you. He's a possible jury goat if you're thinking that far ahead. He's going to maybe, you know, take challenge wins away from someone like a Sean or a John or an Andy on the other side. Why would you want to have Simon? Like, he's such a useful pawn in the game. And Harry is someone who's like, he doesn't trust you. He's an antagonist to you. You called him a cockroach, which I know you think was a compliment, but really just was not a compliment. And just how was this ever even like a conversation? There is no defense that this was a conversation.
So I get it from Janine's perspective the most, where, you know, that Harry had done such a good job of sort of like labeling her as the godmother. I think that Harry was very influenced by David versus Goliath. He talked about Nick Wilson being his favorite player, but I think that he also was probably taking a page out of the Gabby and Christian playbook of calling Cebu the godfather of like, oh, he's the godfather. I gotta get rid of him.
He's the godfather in every Survivor season. Also, if I was Survivor, I would never say my favorite player was the most recent winner. Even if it were true, I'd be like, this will make me look like such a casual. Like, you say you're a fan, you better be pulling out someone from like the Middle Ages, someone super random. You know?
they asked him, who's your favorite player? He's like, Nick. I thought he was gonna say Nick Iadanza.
I know, what a troll to RHAP. Screw you.
he says, Nick from David versus Goliath. And somebody was like, who's that?
Janine, yeah.
that was unnecessary, Janine, to shade Nick Wilson like that. Like, the guy who won. So I don't know what kind of fan you are. But
yeah, but what kind of fan is Harry that he's like, I'm crediting Nick Wilson because of the stick in his mouth? And like, every winner of the last 3 years has a stick in their mouth. Like Wendell, Ben, it really could have been anyone. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Has Harry seen more than David versus Goliath? I mean, I don't have any info that says yes.
I don't know. That's a good point. He may have just like, hey, I'm going to be on Survivor. Got to watch.
But he said
David
he was a big
Goliath
fan. I don't understand.
So I get it from Janine where she's like, hey, Meat Shield, they're never going to vote me out. They're like, we'll go to the merge. They're going to vote out. They're going to go for Harry.
Disagree that she has David and Luke. What shields do you need?
Well, I'm just saying that from her perspective, I'm trying to see the logic.
From
her
perspective, there's no logic. It's illogical.
I'm trying to be devil's advocate here. I thought Abby was the most like, really? What are we doing? Why would we do this?
Abby was like, I can't vote out my childhood hero. Can you imagine that? They're like, yes, I'm. You're going to have to at some point. I mean, are we your childhood heroes? Would you choose him over me? I mean, that's what they keep saying is like, Abby is emotional. You have to think with your head, not your heart. And I agree. But at the same time,
well, she was very sad about E.T. also, right? That was her.
Yeah, like exactly. Like she's like the heart. You know, I've tried to explain them as like outwit, outplay, outlast, the personification of that. But she's also somehow like the emotional person. But just because you say you have to think with your head and not your heart, but then you say something like then your move is totally illogical. It's like, I don't know if you are thinking with your head. I don't know what body part this is, but it's not right. Yeah. Like, you're thinking with your thumb or something. It's not head or heart. It's not emotional. It's not smart.
Yeah. And then Pia, I don't know. She seems like she was on board with it, but I don't know. Can I tell you that? Can I give you my winner pick?
Yes.
That I think it's Pia.
Yeah,
Pia's going to win.
Great edit. We talk about the edit on the Australian Survivor podcast. So.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm happy to be unshackled here.
Aren't they your shackles? Like, it's Rob has a podcast.
I am at the mercy of the people on Twitter who yell at me. So Yeah, Pia. I keep thinking she's getting voted out. I'm like, oh boy, we're seeing a lot of Pia's thoughts in this episode. Like, especially like at the merge, it was just like, here, let's check in on what Pia's thinking about everything, and like get reminded of like what a savvy player Pia is, even though we don't really see her do anything. I think that seems to me suspicious. Like, I've got an eye on Pia for being the winner of the season.
I totally agree. She also like fits the mold of what kind of like the more under the radar players that win the season, but she also gets to tell you she's like specifically being under the radar, which is always great. You know, you'd want someone to be able to give you that content and seem really purposeful, and then you like are understanding the strategic side of their game. I mean, we see a lot. Also, the Pia Janine relationship, which they call like the greatest love story of all time, is clearly
who
crucial.
Said that?
They said that in the episode. They said this is like a love story for the ages or something. It's like, I ship it. I mean, they're a great duo.
Fine.
I feel like they're trying to dissociate from Abby. Like, it really was like the three of them, and now they're like, it's the two of us. And Abby keeps crying about how she won't vote out Simon. Like, we know what's up, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like they're kind of cutting Abby out of that. But, I mean, she's a good physical shield for them. I could see those women doing well, especially now that, like, the champions have the numbers, which is always pretty good coming from Emerge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to throw it back as well to the merge challenge and get kind of your thoughts on this. I mean, I was kind of calling it a strength auction, and I think that's really cool. Actually, my cousin coined the term and I totally stole it from her. So my cousin was calling it a strength auction. Cause you know, you have to like weigh up whether others would drop/bid for whatever the prize was. And like the longer you stayed in, the better it got. So it's like you were buying yourself more money by staying up there longer. And also obviously then there's less chance of other people dropping with you because there's fewer people in the challenge. So that's kind of what I feel like they were going for. And I thought it was actually quite an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, I really loved the reward challenge at the merge. First, no merge feast, correct?
Yeah, I mean, like they often don't do the merge feed. They've had the actual auction before. I think the last two seasons were the actual auction at the merge.
I like that.
These poor people. Like that. They've been on there for a month. Give them a merge feast.
Nah, we get a free. It's like pass go and
everyone
get $200.
Everyone passes. Like everyone in Survivor history gets this merge feast. Give them a merge feast.
No, I like. But this was it's everybody. You know, you got to eat something.
Not Harry and Pia. They only got to eat calling their families, and other people also just dropped out. Simon, David. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they meant
all right,
bad
well,
choice
that,
pulling their
that was on them.
Yeah.
This is bad chop by them. But
no family member could be worth it over chicken parma.
Yeah.
Mexican parma.
I really like this. I thought that this was a cool thing to do because I feel like that we do not often get a merge reward challenge. I feel like that, you know, we have the merge feast. And this was, I feel like that you sort of like got to see a little bit more of, you know, where people were coming from, you know, in a more exciting way than just the merge feast.
Okay, sorry. I'm now, it was not the auction two seasons ago at the merge. It was a reward challenge that they had as well. And people were competing for their letters from home, and then they ended up all getting food. So that was kind of like a way to do it. I mean, I did think it was interesting, but I want to know what your thought was on like Daisy getting everything.
Yeah, that was wild. So it was like a covered item was the reward, which is unusual for Survivor to have like, you know, it's always like, all right, want to know what you're playing for? It's like, we got a box over here. Trust us. It's good. All right, go into and do an endurance competition. Like, there was really no guarantee it was going to be good. Like, it could have been kind of a lame reward to stay up there for. I really was very surprised that David did not drop for an advantage in the immunity challenge. I thought that I'm like, no, you should take that.
Right. Well, what he said later was that, you know, the way that Jonathan had said it, and this was what made him suspicious of Daisy, that he had said, like, it's what you need to continue in the game. So he assumed there'd be obviously an idol component to the reward. Yeah. So he obviously would rather an idol maybe than a challenge advantage, which is probably a good bet considering he does have his idol already. And also, the last time that Jonathan said the box was good was when all the contenders got, like, soap and tweezers That was terrible. So if your track record is like, trust me, it's good, I would be like, Jonathan, I absolutely don't believe you. You better show me what's in that box or I'm not competing in this challenge. Because the last time you said it was good, I got tweezers and I am Sean Hampson. So that's why I don't think you would trust him. I mean, Daisy gets everything. She eats everything. I think we had a little bit of a question last week. Did Daisy eat that many Cornettos? We have our answer and it's yes. And she gets to bathe and like only after she's done all this is she's like, oh, there's an idol. You know, like if David or Luke or Andy or, you know, had won that, the first thing they'd be going for is looking if there was an idol.
Take the box apart. Yeah. Right.
But she was just like, she literally had like a degustation of just like 15 meals and bathed.
Right.
And called her parents. She had a day. She had like a real day out and then was like, ah, an idol. And then she walked back with this like rolled up ball of her dress. That was the worst part for me. Cause it's like,
that was suspicious.
What are you going to tell people? Like, I think it makes sense to be like, I got everything. Like that's pretty powerful. So I think people could believe that. I mean, David was never going to believe her, but just to come up with that like rolled up ball, just like carrying like this idol shaped object in your hand. That was the problem.
That was suspect. That really did increase the threat level of the fact that she had the idol. Did you like the fact that she got an idol in the reward? Because I feel like in all of international Survivor history, I feel like a reward of getting an idol is kind of unprecedented.
I strongly did not like this. And before I say why, I just want to say this is different to the day. I was fine with David getting it in the popcorn reward because it's like David had
but he found it.
Yeah, he found it. And he had to like let all the popcorn out, which could blow up his spot. He had to manipulate his way to the front of the line. He was competing with everyone for that reward. Yes. Like he did the work to get that idol. She obviously did the work in a physical capacity, but she was rewarded with that with like cake and the Parma. And she got to call Pia's husband. I assume that was part of the reward as well. So like, I just feel like to have an idol as well on top of that, I would have much more enjoyed if it was a clue to like a difficult idol find, like at a challenge or something. I think that would have been more deserved. Like just to give it to her in a capacity where no one else is around, really feel like she should have gone and buried it before she came back to camp. But I guess that was her choice. It's just like, it's too easy. What David did was not easy. He had to get to the front of the line. That was like an impossibility, but she didn't have that.
I agree with everything you're saying. And, including the David thing, which I thought that whole sequence was incredible and something that we'll remember for years and years of David, not just finding the idol, but the way that he was eating the popcorn off the ground like a dog.
That's in the ads now.
Reason after. I don't understand.
The ads are
happens.
Like, grab your popcorn and they just have David on the floor.
I love it. I hope that's a gift. That I can search for when I look up Survivor popcorn and be able to tweet that out constantly. But just to go back to Daisy, the idol that she got there should have been like, if you want to give her an idol, make it be like a Chris Noble thing of this is good for tonight's tribal council or the next like two tribal councils. And then that's like if you really want to give her an idol, have it be like. But luckily, she played it at this tribal council.
That was deserved.
It worked out, but it was too much for one reward.
I totally agree. I mean, you say just for this tribal council, she also had like a challenge advantage, which she like, I think all of it was fine. Like this is what Luke got at the auction 2 years ago, which was that he like bowed out first in the auction and then ended up winning what everyone else won. No wonder he bowed out first here for the Tim Tams as well, because maybe you thought it was a little bit similar. And I have no problem with all of that. It's just when you put an idol there, even if it's a clue or as you said, temporary idol's a cool one, an advantage, an extra vote, fine. But a whole idol in a way that she's just there by herself. It's not even like, it's not like a group reward where you have to like hide it. Like it's just so easy. And I just thought it was so funny that it was the last thing that she did. Like, I don't think Daisy concentrates on idols/the game when there's like rewards around. I think that's not like a running theme.
Yeah. Too much, too powerful. That's the first reward of the season. first individual reward of the season.
Well, I mean, I was saying before that the rewards were not good, like not good enough for how hard they were competing. Mostly the tweezers. I mean, the tweezers really got to me. That's a terrible reward. I also said the hot chocolate and the marshmallows, terrible. But this was a lot. I mean, no way she could have eaten all that stuff. And but that, I think it's all fine, just bar the idol. The idol is the only problem that I have with it. But then, so as we're saying, David mostly gets her to flush it, and I'm just in awe. As I've said, best player of the season, sometimes the worst player of the season, but the way that he just kind of threw it out there, like the words he was very carefully choosing at camp about, like, you know, when there's idol, there's chatter. There just is chatter. And then the way he was talking at tribal council, it was funny because it was a unanimous vote on Andy. And still, he was like, as they were talking about how Andy was definitely going home, he's like, ah, but you never know. You never really know, do you, Daisy? You never know how it's going to go. And somehow she fell for it. Like, incredible, masterful work from David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's been just so stellar, and he's, you know, played big and aggressive, and I think it's what we like to see. I'm just like, what has been the difference in your mind between the, you know, big aggressive game that David has played and the big aggressive game that Andy played? Like, what do you, can you put your finger on, like, what they, like, is there something that David was also doing that Andy wasn't doing? Because both people, you know, came in with this idea of playing this huge game, but it's been successful for one and not as successful for the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it comes down to the people, and it's whether you can get people to work with you. Andy had good ideas, throwing the challenge, good idea. Couldn't get Baden to do it with him, you know, voting with, you know, getting people, getting David and Luke to vote with him would have worked out. Like, those things would have worked out, but people didn't trust him. And I don't believe that was a coincidence. I believe that he didn't endear trust, you know, in the other people by lying, you know, unnecessary lies. I mean, like, the merge tribe lie, like, everyone's done it, but okay, like, you know, it just was like every opportunity he took to lie, he did. And I personally think that you should do that as little as possible in Survivor. Obviously, David has had his big lies, but around that, he's formed genuine connections, like genuine relationships with people. Before the fake idol got blown up, he had really connected with Davey, John, Baden, who said they just wanted to hang out with him more. Like, there's that social connection. He obviously, you know, obviously the women are onto him now, but he has a really good connection with Luke. He has had a really good connection with the women. That is probably genuine in some way. So it's just like, you can have the moves, you can have the ideas, but you need people to work with you, and you need, like, a better read on the game than I think Andy seemed to be. It's the social connections and it's the read that make what I think the moves are 5% of Survivor, you know? So those ideas are 5% and everything else is a 95. And I don't feel that Andy had that.
Yeah. I think that you need the bonds and the social connections, where we saw, like, when Andy was trying to then, you know, get in good with David, you know, David saw, like, right through it.
Yeah.
And he's he's like, I know what he's doing. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, that's easy to say in the confessional, but I think that you're probably right. I think that you need that baseline of, you know, establish the trust with everybody. And then you can be able to, you know, make those moves. Or in the case of, like, Harry, like, you know, just own a little bit more the despicableness of where we saw at the tribal council where Andy got called out on, like, Andy, is this true? He's like, no, it's not true. So he denied it, where I have to think that, like, Harry in that spot would patently say,
Oscar is, yeah, not real.
You
know, yeah.
You got me on that one. Yeah, I definitely did try to get rid of Daisy, but here's why you shouldn't get rid of me tonight. So the pivot from that. So it was sort of neither thing, that he wasn't just, like, completely owning all of his lies, and then also wasn't getting people to trust him after they had happened.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that. Like, David's not the perfect comparison, because David's also a big game player. David's also made a lot of people mistrust him. But David just does these, like, David has, I think, a really good read a lot of the time. He's had idols that obviously Andy didn't have. I mean, he'd have gone home if he didn't have an idol. So that's important. Like, if you're going to be a big game player, you probably need some tools, you know, in the bag as well. And I mean, he's not the perfect comparison as, like, an antidote to Andy. I feel like Luke probably is, because, like, Luke's a big game player. But Luke's social game is, like, you know, if Andy has Luke's social game, he probably wins Survivor. But if Andy has Luke's social game, like, he's a different human being. So I think that's what it is. Like, look how Luke's come in and everyone loves him. No one's turning on Luke. You know, he's at the merge, even though he's a huge threat. He has so many friends across the aisle of champions and contenders. Those are people who will vouch for you. You're not getting voted out at that tribal council, but no one was vouching for Andy at the merge tribal council. That's why he was, like, such an easy unanimous vote. And it, like, as I said, all the lies came back to bite him. The fact that John was so indignant that he'd thrown the challenge, and also, like, on his tribe's behalf, also in his voting confessional on the template website, he was just like, so personally offended by that. Like, I think just like all of the gay moves really came back to bite Andy, and he didn't have that like basis of connection to begin with to kind of make that work.
I think it's not necessarily fair to compare Luke's social game to anybody else. Cause I think that Luke is the most likable person on the planet. Is there anybody who watches Australian Survivor who dislikes Luke?
Twitter is mean.
Twitter is mean about Luke? No.
Twitter loves Luke, but there's always going to be a couple of people who like somehow, you know, no one's like got 100%, you know, hit rate. But I mean, Luke's pretty close. I think he really
got to be the closest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, people love him. He's so his social game has to be up there with the best. I mean, just look at the way he interacts with people. Just incredible.
And we
don't
even get anything about Luke's family and his home life, and right, he has like a special needs kid also too, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got a bit of it. He just had a daughter. So he had the daughter in like March, and this was filmed like May. And the daughter has cystic fibrosis. Yeah. Like, there's a lot.
Right.
There's a lot.
And that's like not even part of his story. And he's so universally beloved.
Yeah. I love how when people, you know, get voted out, they're always like, I want Luke to win. And we've seen it with like E.T., who wasn't aligned with him, Ross, who hadn't been on a tribe with him for ages. And how many other people. I also remember it from Luke's first season. People were just like, you know what? Now that I'm out, I hope Luke wins. And that just shows like, I don't think he will win because he's still too big a threat. But like, that's the social game. And that's what I'm saying. That's the 95%, you know, even if Luke makes no moves, that's the 95, and Luke will still make moves. But the moves and the numbers are really just, you know, 0 to 5%, I think, of the game. And speaking of Andy as well, and this was something that was pretty contentious online. I know I had some words about it. His final words where he throws David under the bus, he says David has an idol, cut to his actual final words where he says he believes David doesn't have an idol, which was pretty funny. But did you like this? Is this because am I too angry about this? Because I don't think this is something that should be allowed.
Yeah, I didn't. I saw people were upset about that. And I was confused about it where it was like, oh, David has an idol. I'm like, wait, hold on a second. How does he know this? And I'm like, you know, the meme of like Zach Galifianakis with like all of the numbers, like flying, like, wait, hold on. When did that happen? How did he know? And then he said in the confessional that, oh, and I totally like dropped a bomb on them that I told them that David has an idol. And like, it was so perfect Andy that even in his final parting words, his plan his plan to tell a fake lie was wrong.
That's when it's like, din, 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 din. You know, like that's like the sitcom Andy.
But it like somehow like it was like full Andy of that. He was wrong. And it ended up being like a hit. Because he was trying to like make up a lie, and actually was he stumbled on to actually the truth. So that was I didn't have a big problem with that.
Yeah, I have a really big problem. I mean, like I don't know. I'm angry.
Why did
about
it make you so bad?
Yeah, that shouldn't be allowed. That's a terrible precedent to set. Imagine using that as blackmail. I mean, any Survivor contestant throughout the history of ever could have done that, and yet barely any have. I think just due to etiquette, like what precedent is that setting? Where it's like, well, if you vote me out, which I'll know that you did it because I'll be voted out, I'll just blow up your spot, or I'll, you know, a lot of people have more valid information than Andy, so I'll tell this legitimate thing about you. I mean, that's not that. I don't think it's, I guess in Survivor we don't say this, but I just don't think it's fair. It's not within the confines of the game. Like, yes, David was being super aggressive with the way he threw Andy under the bus, and there are ways that can come back to bite him in the confines of the game. If Andy works out, I'm 100% going home, this Daisy plan is not happening, I can blow up my whole spot here because I'm definitely going home, then he can blow up Dave's spot. Or if he ends up being a juror, he can get him back that way. That's within the confines of the game. Like, I don't think that standing there, it says, once you voted out, you must leave the tribal council area immediately. There's no like inbuilt final words where you can say, you know, your piece. That's not an inbuilt part of the game. So it's like not really a fair thing to kind of plan for. I don't know. I obviously thought it was a little petty, but like just beyond that of what
certainly
should be allowed.
Petty.
Yeah, I mean, certainly petty, but like that's fine. I mean, these are reality TV contestants. I don't really mind about that. It's just more like how does the game protect you against that? Because I think that if a precedent is set for that, that would encourage really conservative gameplay. Why would you vote people out who are going to blow up your spot?
Well, I don't think that you can safeguard against it. I think you just have to make. Well, what's the safeguard? We won't pay you your money if you do something like that?
At Survivor Mickey on Twitter, send me the perfect suggestion.
Survivor Jackson.
I don't get the joke because I only follow BB Twitter. But he suggested this incredible idea. He solved it. Trapdoors. That's it. Jonathan has the clicker. Andy starts saying, oh, and by the way, trapdoor, fall down it. Fixed it.
There's like great Survivor moments, like Judd walking out, you're a scumbag, and that's not trapdoor worthy.
It's until you start giving game information. It's until you start playing the game. You're trying to cause a rumor. That's a game move. In fact, some people said that was Andy's best move, which I found funny because I'm like, how can it be his best move? He's not an active player. He's not playing the game.
No, but I think that it is something that I think that people should think about in terms of you could pull an Andy, and again, it would be part of the Australian game. We haven't seen that exactly.
No, don't even put that Shireen into the universe.
Did Shireen do something like that? I saw that somebody said that it was like, what did she do?
So apparently she said in an ex interview, but it wasn't shown, that she did the same thing to Terry. I don't like that she did that.
Terry didn't really have an idol, right?
Yeah, I mean, and David could have not had an idol. And of course they can come back and then David will just be like, well, Andy would never know what I do or don't have, and they'll be right. Like, Andy's a known liar, so
I don't know.
But like, it's not the outcome; it's the intention.
More drama this is a thing, and then Andy has now accused David of having. Does David then? And the interesting thing here is that Andy, throughout this lie, it happened to be something that's true. So does David come back to the tribe and say, "Hey, this was fake news"? Does he come back and then tell everybody, "You know what? You're right. I do have an idol, so can't vote for me at the next tribal council." And I think that it ends up being the kind of chip that people could play of like, "Hey, just so you know, if you vote me out at this next tribal council," because I think that people definitely
there should not be. That's not a chip to use. You're not a player in the game. And that's why I think people play more conservatively, because that's a terrible chip for the show to have.
But what's the difference between that and like, hey, if you vote me out, I'm going to go to the jury. I'll poison the jury against you. You won't win, because that definitely happens. So,
yeah, but that's a legitimate part of the game. Like you have a prerogative as a jury member to do what you want. Like you're an active player of the game in a different sense when you're a jury member. But as you're standing there on what I'm calling the trapdoor area, you are not a legitimate player in the game. You're an inactive player. And like the power imbalance between an inactive player who has nothing to lose and Andy, compared to someone like David or anyone in the game who is still managing a delicate game because they're still playing Survivor, there's a huge power imbalance. Andy can say anything he wants, and David's in a delicate spot. And like, it's not just because it's Andy, like anyone who does that. Victoria, for example, saying, "Gavin, I'm voting for you," because she wants him to vote out Gavin. Stop. You're not a player anymore. This is not your game to play.
Mention that of like, what's the difference between that and
Made me angry.
I don't know. I think the genie is out of the bottle. I don't know. Like, I need to protect it against that. Yeah, I don't think you can do it. And
Salt
you have to
be great
just...
TV. Goes flying as soon as he starts making a speech. That would be in the ass.
Shannon, I'm sorry that the norms are gone from Survivor, that there is no Survivor etiquette in terms of the people getting voted out. And I think we just have to embrace it.
The fact that only a couple of people have done something like this in Survivor history shows that most people must feel there is an etiquette, and only a couple.
They haven't thought of it. They haven't thought of
it. That makes me scared. That's just terrible. Like, I really don't want this to be like the legacy of the season, that this is now what happens. I honestly think that will like really mess with the game, and they're going to have to start installing some trapdoors. So thank me later that I solved this issue for you, Australian Survivor.
You got it.
And one thing we didn't really talk about before we get to the chizzy and the questions and all the things was Ross's evacuation. Not a lot to say about this. I mean, except that it's unfortunate that it happened due to like the challenge. I don't know if there's a lot there. A lot of people texting me like, can Ross sue the show? And I'm like, no, surely not, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that I have no idea. You have to ask, Russell Hantz what the Australian Survivor contract looks like. But
well, he broke that a million times over.
Sign your life over and are not able to do, sue them for any sort of injuries that occurred.
Yeah, I mean, because this is like, it literally was the show's fault. And like, also because, okay, so you were watching it all in one go, but the ads were like, there's going to be an evacuation. Like, they straight up
Yeah, I saw
us.
The previews, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, it got even worse than the ads. It was like 100% someone is getting medevaced. So that kind of made the rest of the challenge and the strategizing a little boring, but it's okay. But, yeah, I mean, that challenge was so dangerous, hopping from pole to pole. I know you're not really interested in the challenges, but it was like, we knew one of them was getting medevaced. It was so anxiety-inducing. Then they all got past the pole point, and we were like, what? And then it was the rope. So unfortunate. I mean, that sucked. Like, that's always really unfortunate to see in a really good season. I mean, it might have made the season more interesting because we ended up with, like, a 6-6 at the merge and stuff, but pretty sad.
Yeah, it was sad, but, I was flying through the challenge at, like, 2x, and they're like, oh, wait, hold on, is that David? It's like, all right, oh, it's just Ross.
Yeah, I mean, like, could have been Luke, but
Ross
is good,
Ross,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunate. Yes. Unfortunate for Ross, but...
Look. I was just, happy it wasn't like one of the people really moving the needle.
Yeah, this is what the edit makes you want. Like, they edit Ross a little bit down so that you're.
That's I can't help it. I'm a casual.
Saying that you just know that you're being like led by what the edit is doing to you.
Yes, yes. Look, I can't help it. I am just a filthy casual watching Luke and David, the same way that John might be looking at a delicious Mexican parma with all their idols. So delicious confessionals, just coming up with names and all the different choreographed uniforms. So good. Just think about it all the time.
Do it again with the accent. Gonna do it with the accent.
No. We have a lot of Australians. Listen, I'm not gonna insult them with doing a crappy Australian accent.
Especially because John is like, it's like they just like made Australia into a person. I've never seen someone so Australian as John. Like, he is. Yeah. Mexican Palmer. We got a lot of questions about it. Not something I'd ever heard of before this season. I always feel like I'm not an Australian when I watch Australian Survivor. I feel like I'm not South African when I watch South African Survivor. Don't know who I am, and I don't know what a Mexican Palmer is.
I have never seen another person's butt as much as I've seen John's butt.
Well, I'm sorry for
Nicole. I've seen more than any other person in the entire world. Certainly more than myself. I've never seen anybody else's butt as much as I've seen John's butt.
Yeah, it's like an episodic thing. Like, who has more confessionals, John's butt or Simon?
Most of the people, like the entire rest of the cast, has not gotten as much screen time as John's butt.
All of the contender women combined compared to John's butt. Yeah, I don't know why it's such a thing. Like, maybe he's a secret super fan trying to pull like a Richard Hatch thing. That's how Andy would come at it, If Andy was getting naked all the time, he would be like calling out Richard Hatch. And now everyone's picturing that. So,
yeah, John, in terms of the gameplay, has like nothing going on. But John, the character, is incredible. I don't know. I just said that between the mullet and he's naked all the time and then the Mexican parma, like all those things. He's like Mr. Cold Open of they always go to him for like he's like a solid guy to start the episode with, like 2 minutes of John doing something outrageous.
I'm going to put it out to our American listeners. I know we have a lot of international listeners, not just America, everywhere. There's no way you guys understand anything he's saying, right? Like, you must need a Google translator because he's speaking Australian. You didn't know it was a different language, but apparently it is. Even I'm like, I've never heard most of those words. I don't know what that is.
No, he's fantastic. And I wish he would have gotten the shampoo and the bath. And he wanted the Mexican parma.
That was a troll.
That was great. And just like, I feel like him like shaking his mullet in slow motion. I think it could have been a good moment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, another thing you can't give Chizzy points to is John's butt or Oscar, really just active players in the game. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News and World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
And we are back. All right. I want to get to the Chizzy. Rob, last time you were on the Survivor South Africa podcast, you said I was too invested in the Chizzy. Well, joke's on you, because since you were on the podcast, I have a theme song. It's really just growing. My obsession continues. So I took none of your advice on board, and it really is just still a great segment.
I have no complaints about the Chizzy. I just thought that when you were talking about how that you were staying up at night talking about that you were, you know, trying to figure out ways to make it work. You know, I wanted you to make sure that, you know, you were focused on your life outside of Survivor. Really, what I dinged you for was your obsession with the sponsors. That's really where I got into full Wiggler and told you to live your life of that, like, just focus on the show. Don't get too worked up. And then you have not listen. You're no. Drinking Biostrath.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That, when you have to go into rehab for Biostrath, then I don't want to hear about you, your family and your fiance. Like, you ruined Shannon's life, you monster. Okay. Like, hey, I told her to cut back on the Biostrath habit.
I love it. Rob was like, yeah, don't be drinking the Biostrath. Don't be talking about the sponsors that much. And I got Biostrath shipped in by my mom through airport security so I could drink it. Believe me, I'm not going to rehab. It was terrible. Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much.
This is like some international Biostrath smuggling ring that this turned into.
Yeah, that's what we've become.
Started out just a little like, online video pirating, turned into a whole Biostrath smuggling ring.
Let's not just talk about all the illegal things I'm doing on the podcast, but what I'm really obsessed about it with Australian Survivor is Boost Juice. I mean, Janine Alice is a marketing genius. She's not a sponsor, but she kind of is. I mean, she's still on the show and you're still thinking about Boost, aren't you? Brilliant marketing. So
Boost Juice, that's her product?
Yes, it's very good. It's better than Biostrath.
What does it do?
It's just a smoothie bar. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything. It's good juice, good smoothies. It's very, very successful. I'm sorry. Okay,
that's the name of the store.
Yeah.
That's the name of the store. I thought it was like a specific Boost Juice something for me.
It's a juice bar. It's like a Jumba juice. That's what you guys have.
But got it. Yeah,
I assume better. Yeah. So free advertising for Janine. She's brilliant. I don't even know how we got talking about Biostrath. I want to get to the Chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. It's getting kind of Chizzy. 3, 2, 1.
All right. The Chizzy. And I love how you're like, oh, stop staying up at night thinking about the Chizzy and live your life. Like, have you met me, Rob? Well, you don't know me at all.
Well, Shannon, I think that you are the queen of Survivor and that nobody loves a Survivor in all of its forms more than you. And so I'm just...
And
that,
he does.
To be... Well,
he would tell you.
just to be, take a second and just congratulate you on everything that you've been doing. I'm just so impressed from when was the first time we talked about Survivor? When you talked about Debbie?
Yeah, Debbie was my gateway Survivor.
Yeah, and you've just taken all of this and run with it. And I am so proud of everything that you've built around these international Survivor seasons.
Okay, the chizzy section is usually my favorite section of the podcast, so and now I love it even
for
more.
Shannon Gage.
Okay, this is amazing. I will accept those chizzy points. We will put it in the leaderboard. That is legit. You can't give it to John's butt, but you can give it to me. So
okay, I'll
accept
them.
No. That still makes a mockery of it. No,
and that you are so in the weeds on all of the strategy, but then also all of the nonsense. And I think that those are the two parts of Survivor that I love so much. And I think that you've done such a great job of everything with these international seasons and really getting into all the things that are fun about Survivor.
Okay. Well, I don't really know how to respond to compliments, let alone from like the person I most respect in the world on the air. So I'm gonna get to the chizzy. But thank you, and I appreciate it.
And I didn't want to forget it. Okay. Who goes first?
In all honesty, Rob, like this is my dream come true, and I appreciate it all the time. So I appreciate the words and the opportunity. And I'm now talking about the actual chizzy. I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay. Have to get past that. Okay, 3 points to David. Again, sometimes people say I'm biased. I don't like that because I explicitly tell them I'm not biased, but he's a brilliant player. The way that he acted in this merge episode, the merge vote, which people who listen to my podcast know, I think the merge vote is like the most important vote of the season. Only like 3 winners ever have voted correctly at the incorrectly at the merge. It's important to vote correctly at the merge. So he didn't just do that. He made it a unanimous vote. He made Andy vote for Davey. No champions got votes for them. And then to make it 3 points, I mean, he flushed Davey's idol. What a brilliant, brilliant episode. It had to be 3 points once he'd flushed the idol. So definitely giving,
and didn't play his own.
Yeah, didn't play his own. I mean, he had great read. Unanimous vote. Just the way he broke that 6-6 was just brilliant. I'm going to give 2 points to Harry, who, if it had just been the first 2 episodes, I think that, you know, he would have got 3 votes. But David, just so brilliant there. Yeah, excellent this week. Found idols, threw everything at the wall. Difficult situation. He may have even made it through if Ross wasn't medevaced. I guess we'll never know, but brilliant. And then just the way that he also lay so low at the merge when he'd been such a focal point is another just really, really stellar point to the resume. So kind of railed on him last week with the fake kid stuff and everything else he was doing, but this was big improvement. And again, no bias here. I really am just commenting on what I see, but I have to give a point to Luke because he's really doing what David does, but in the shadows, which is actually better in many ways. As I said, Jericho won, and he's the Jericho. He's the connector to the champion women, who obviously against David, but not him, making relationships with the contenders. Baden is a massive one in there. We saw some connection there. And, you know, he threw Andy under the bus when it counted and kind of like widened that chasm for the contenders to make sure the vote would go through. That duo is just leading the whole game. And I will give an honorable mention, because that's what we do here, to Matt, actually, who obviously only lasted through one episode of this week, but I thought what he was doing was good. And it was good to see him have some strategic chops between, you know, beyond just the challenges. I mean, if you were skipping through the challenges, Rob, you must have not even seen Matt on your screen. But he ended up kind of coming out of the woodwork, and a Space Jam confessional, which I love.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was good. Okay. All right. So I have a lot of the same names as you do, but I have them in a different order. So hear me out on my points for this week's chizzy. So I'm going to go 3 points for Harry this week. I really felt like that this was his week. And so he ended up sort of he looked like dead man walking at the start of the week. I really thought that he was sort of like doomed to sort of like the AK spot of like, OK, he's sort of our pre-merge star and he is not going to be long for the game. But he ends up with the idol play in the first episode of the week, episode 12. And then in episode 13, he ends up being able to, for whatever, and like, I don't even know if I can give him the credit or that he made himself so much of an endearing figure to Janine that she's like, all right, fine, I'll work with him and keep him around. They didn't have to go to the tribal council, but he would have survived that tribal council, presumably, in episode number 13, he ends up having being stolen to go on the reward with everybody in I guess that was in was that episode 12 or 13 where he went on the reward with everybody.
It was 13,
but he was he's like a super popular figure with the contenders, as much as it looked like that the champions were trying to get him out. But then we get to the merge and he did something that seemed impossible only a couple episodes ago. He was invisible.
Mm.
Nobody was looking for him.
He was basically a contender woman.
Yeah. He was back to being Purple Harry. And so for him to lower his threat profile down to, I mean, that you would have thought after that that joint tribal council that he was at, where if I was going to tell you, like, oh, okay, well, when we get to the merge, somebody's going to be a unanimous vote at the merge, you would have said, oh, definitely Harry, after that tribal council performance he had a couple of weeks ago, where everybody just, he's completely exposed as a liar and nobody can trust him. He has said the whole thing about a fake kid in front of everybody. You would have said, oh, it's definitely going to be Harry. And his name wasn't even thrown out there. So to come back from where he was, I will give him the reach as he points, and he could be a factor here in the post merge because he's got a lot of connections between the contenders and then also the champion women, who that they may not trust David implicitly, and so that he could be a fallback option, and he's somebody who can find idols. So I think that he's somebody that could hide behind everybody being focused on David now moving forward. So 3 points for Harry. I'll give 2 points for Luke. Because, again, it's, to me, blows my mind that we're talking about Luke as somebody who is not the biggest threat on the board. People are not gunning for Luke coming into this season, that he's like an afterthought. And it's like impossible to imagine a scenario where he's in this position. So good on Luke for being somebody who is been able to make all these bonds and not be considered to be this massive threat in the game. And I only have 1 point for David. You made some really great points about how we got it to be a unanimous vote against Andy. But I think that there's a lot of supposition there that we don't know what happened. I feel like that this was a episode where when this merge vote somehow got to be unanimously on Andy, and maybe, you know, you have information from the exit interviews, but I feel like that a lot of it did not happen on the screen. So I don't know necessarily how we got to all the votes being on Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I think David and Luke were really leading that. I mean, they were the ones who obviously had like the problem with Andy because he'd made them waste their idols. We kind of saw them talking to everyone. I mean, Luke was probably a really big part of that, you know, more with the contenders. Luke has better relationships than David. So if someone's spreading it around, it would, I think, largely be Luke. But I feel like David's leading the plans and kind of like he might go earlier for it. But that's what gets my chizzy points, where I feel like we at least get getting confessional from him. Luke probably had it too, but we're getting confessional where he's like, I'm coming for Andy, you know, and explaining why. And, you know, and we did see him do the little things like tell Andy to vote for Daisy, which, you know, he did. And I think flushing the idol was a lot of David. Just the way he was talking, especially in tribal council. I think like all of those parts were David. And like the girls were thinking of turning on him, which I don't think would have been a good move, because you kind of, you want that six if you can have it, right? You definitely want the majority if you can have it. And I've always said, I feel like they're a couple of steps ahead of him and they have time to get rid of him, but he did get no votes. So I think, you know, but like also the champions have been in a good spot. I think it's really interesting that they came to the 6-6 and the contenders obviously crumbled and all voted for, you know, each other. But the champions, even though they have an issue with David, stayed strong. And I think the champions, they decided their own numbers, you know, through the pre-swap. They didn't lose anyone in the post-swap. So they decided their group and Simon. And then the contenders kind of had the group decided for them by the way the numbers switched up in, you know, the swap. So it might not be as cohesive a group. So I think the champions are all in a pretty good spot. They all did pretty well, but I just see David as like the ideas man and Luke kind of like putting in the social work behind the scenes, which is probably more important, but David was flashy and he got my points. And when I give Luke 3 points, people are like, that's just because you're, I'm like, I'm telling you it's not because I'm biased. Like, he's such a good player. And then my guests also give Luke 3 points and I'm biased.
But you're biased strap. I'll give my honorable mention to Pia because I think she's going to win the season.
Okay. Well, but what does she do for that role?
She's Sicilian. She's Sicilian. Can't you see? She's an actress.
We get a lot of that.
She's nobody can see what she's doing. And everybody's watching out for her.
Yeah.
Only me and Janine know what she's doing.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get to a couple of questions. I often have some JLP tweets, but I feel like he was really not on his game this week. So come on, JLP, give me some more. Yeah, there was very little inappropriateness. I guess like there's not a lot to do when like Ross is getting medevaced. He was like, "This sucks," you know, rather than being like making a joke about it. Yeah, probably
maybe
appropriate.
He saw those people on social media saying that Ross should sue Survivor.
Yeah, he was like, "I'm just gonna lie low for a
couple
of days."
Better keep a low profile.
Okay, so we worked it out. I still think put a trap door remote in his hand, you'd have some excellent television, but. Andrea Raffle, to get to some of the questions, asks, are the contenders really screwed? Can you see any of them breaking in enough to get to the end?
The contenders?
Yeah, I mean, well, now they're in the minority, but if this champions group, if this six are the final six, like, I will eat Andy's visor. Like, there's just no way.
No way.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, I don't think that they're gonna stick together because... I feel like that the three women, they still, you know, it could end up working out. Like, I know we talked about, like, what are they thinking with making that bond with Harry? But if they flip now and then go back to the contenders, you know, if Harry and the contenders are going to be scrambling and they say, like, hey, all right, we're with you guys. Let's, we want to get rid of, because, you know, you still have David out there as such a big target. If they want to turn on David and Luke and go with the contenders, like, I think that they have that option.
Do you think it would be David and Luke? Like, they're definitely going for David. I feel like they think, like, Luke is with them. Like, he has good relationships with them, but, I mean, they're coming from at a point, but the contenders... Look, I don't feel good for Sean Hampson. I feel like he's out the door if he doesn't win a challenge. Possibly someone like a Daisy, too, kind of like the leaders there. But then who's getting rid of John? Baden has good inroads. He's definitely, like, if I'm thinking any of the contenders are slipping through and getting the furthest, I think I would say Baden, which I like because I really like Baden. But Harry, he has some relationships. Like, Harry's also going to get taken out at some point. But I feel like he has, you know, relationships. They could work with him to maybe take out David. So... for a vote or two, they might stick champion strong. I think they can hold it together. Definitely for a Sean Hampson / maybe Davey vote is what I'd be thinking. But then they're coming for someone like a David. I mean, they were thinking about it in this merge episode. Like, it's definitely not staying all the way to six.
Yeah. For Luke and David, like, who do they want to go to the end game with?
Anyone.
I can't imagine they want to go to the end game with the, like, three champion ladies, right?
Luke would beat anyone. I mean, if I was Luke, like, sure, whoever's willing to take you.
Like, do they have anything in common? Those, like, Luke and David, and then the Janine and company?
Yeah, I mean, they're all scorpions, perfumed scorpions. I mean, yeah, for Luke, it's so hard for Luke, because it's like, he's doing so well, but you also know, like, what are the odds that he wins this thing? He's such an obvious jury threat. Like, they're definitely taking him out at a point. And then when I heard Rossi, like, me and Luke could have gone to the end together, I'm like, this is so frustrating. Like, someone who wanted to go to the end with Luke is gold, and I hate losing that. So, yeah, I mean, if I were Luke, I would take any relationship with me to the end. We see a lot of Luke and Baden now. That's adorable. Maybe that's the final two that I would absolutely love. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, imagine if Luke and David sat next to each other. That would be incredible. And there's 0% chance that that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
John Johnson asks, which temptation would Rob take of the merged
board? Let me think about what was out there. I don't know. Like, the stuff with cheese on Survivor, I feel like, does not hold up well. The chocolate cake would be tempting.
The chocolate cake's the worst one. I can't believe you said that. That looked so terrible. You take two bites of that, surely you're throwing up everywhere.
Yeah, but I feel like that Survivor is a world where you can eat whatever you want. Like, they say that that's when you die, that you can just eat whatever you want and you don't have to worry about any sort of repercussions. And to me, that's like the greatest appeal of going on Survivor, of that you can just gorge yourself and then there's like no repercussions. You're not worried about, you know, putting on weight or, you know, like I'm going to gain 8 pounds if I eat this. That's to me what is the number one selling point of going to Survivor is. So
the number one selling point of both Survivor and Death. Good to know.
Yes. Yes. That, you know, you can just eat the entire chocolate, even though I'm not a big chocolate cake person, but just the idea of being, if you wanted to, you could eat an entire chocolate cake. That's compelling. And the pizza, as bad as it is, it's still pizza.
What about a call home to your beautiful fake children?
Yeah.
Do you think Nicole's getting an hour and 40 minutes into the Survivor podcast? That
sure.
Reaction?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, the call home is going to be like, hey, guys, like, how's everything going? And Nicole would be like, I've been up early with these kids for the 30th day in a row. I can't. I'm not sleeping. It's terrible. Like, oh, okay, well, all right, let me get back to the game, hon.
I gave up chocolate cake for this.
All right, yeah, all right. Luke's calling me. All right, I gotta go.
And the kids are sick, and it's terrible here. When are you coming home?
All right, I gotta go. We got a challenge. Okay, bye.
So no on the call home? You know,
no, it's terrible.
Well, okay,
like family visit would be good, and Nicole would be like, okay, well, she's out of the house because she's on a you know, family visit would be fine.
Yeah, then she's on holiday.
Yeah, I'm just hearing about like how you know, terrible things are and how she has to, you know, do all the things that I would be doing at the house.
I'm obsessed with the fan fiction that is Harry and Harry's real girlfriend. Apparently she's real. She's obviously clearly from America. All of that was true, unless they hired an actress for that phone call, which would really be thinking ahead. But what I love is that she told him pre-season not to lie about the kid, right? She begged him not to lie about the kid. So when he calls, she's probably thinking, oh my God, please don't ask about Oscar. Please don't have lied. Don't have made up the stupid lie. And he didn't ask. She
didn't
must have
do
been
this
so,
thing, did you?
Yeah.
You didn't do that stupid lie that
but
I told
she
you
must
not
have
to
been
do,
so
right?
relieved. Little does she know he did lie about it and got caught out. It's the worst possible option, Harry's girlfriend. It could not be worse. So
does Harry own his own ice cream thing, or he just works at an ice cream thing?
I have no idea, really. I mean, he's also a dietitian. And what was his other job?
Well, that seems suspect also, he is an ice cream man and a dietitian. Like, it feels like that, you know, he's getting you both ways.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that any dietitian who's ostensibly telling you need to be eating ice cream, like, you need to be raising your eyebrows at that. So it's a weird group of things that Harry does, but I just love that his girlfriend was probably just waiting, hoping that he wouldn't ask about Oscar, because it means that his game is not like this bombastic mess, and it's messier than she ever could have imagined.
Very messy.
I love the whole idea of Harry's whole family, his fake kid and his very smart strategic girlfriend.
Much like Oscar with a bowl full of rum raisin ice cream. Very messy.
Well, yeah, I mean, as he said, Oscar was like really just eating plain foods and just saying mommy and daddy. I just don't think he's ever met a child. Like, why would you lie about a child? You've never met a child.
Think he would meet a lot in the ice cream store.
Yeah. You would think. I mean, I don't know. Harry, he got 5 chizzy points this week. In fact, he's a chizzy winner this week. So we can't keep saying mean things. Sean Yanor asks, was Daisy's failed idol play actually a good move? Is it better to have no idol at all than an idol that your ops know about, or at least greatly suspect?
Is it that your ops know about? That was the question said?
Yes.
Okay, good job. Yeah, it was just so conspicuous how she came back holding that little, I've got like a purple bag full of stuff. This
that's
is just
the
like,
woman's bulge. That's where you got to put it.
Later in my lady, don't pay no attention to my lady bulge purse carrying. So maybe it was just like the jig was up on Daisy. Like, everybody just assumed that Daisy had an idol and they were going to flush it at that tribal council anyway. Maybe that's what she was worried about. So for her to play it, I don't know. It depends on how much buzz and chatter there was that maybe she had the idol from the reward.
No, I think, like, if everyone knows you have it, it's not that bad because you're, like, side versus side. It's champions versus contenders. Like, it's not, like, this, like, secret war. Like, it's all, an all-out war. So if you have a very public, you know, advantage that you can still keep in the game, I think even if people know about it, you shouldn't be using it. I mean, it was a unanimous vote. She shouldn't have fallen for this. It would be better to have an idol, even one that people know about, because, you know, even if they're going to flush it at a point, I mean, as I said, it could be her next week. If Sean wins immunity next week and she had an idol, she's saved. Otherwise, if he wins, she probably goes home. Like, she really needs that idol in this very public war. And it was unanimous against Andy. She shouldn't have played it. I mean, sit on our couches and talk about it, but unanimous vote, surely you're not playing the idol.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing that you talk yourself into. Like, well, it's probably better for that I played the idol and then just got rid of it so that people aren't, you know, worried about me.
Yeah, people are going to say things because last week I said it's fine for Luke to have played the idol because better to have played it and not go home. You know, like, and that is largely true. I'm just saying that from our perspective, and we had all the same information that Luke and David had, we were all screaming on our couches for him to play the idol, whereas it just seems like this one was a unanimous vote. But I guess you never really know, and she still is, Shannon, in the game.
Both these things could be true. It is better to play an idol wrong than to be voted out with an idol in your pocket. That is objectionably true, that it is better to misplay an idol than to be voted out with. And it's also, it can also still be better to not burn your idol and keep it in your pocket than to misplay it. If you're going to rank those three things, three chizzy points for keeping your idol and not misplaying it, two chizzy points for and then
getting voted out is the worst.
Misplaying it, and then no chizzy points for getting voted out with the idol in your pocket.
Please use chizzy points now to just, like, rank things. That would be great for my legacy. I feel like the chizzy is my legacy on the podcast, so I'm really trying to just kind of spread that. I also love that a lot of this podcast is me, like, grieving to you about, well, people on Twitter say this about me, so I just want to say this first, and then you make me feel better about it. So the important thing is I'm not too tapped into what people are saying online, and it's not affecting my judgment. Okay, Emperor of Chocolate asks, yeah, that's the name we were given. Do you guys feel like a big game player like David, Janine, Luke, or Sean? Is Sean a big game player, but could finally win Survivor AU? Or will a more subtle and patient game player like Pia or Baden win like last year? Well, you think Pia is winning?
Yeah, I think that a person who plays that big of a game, I mean, have they even reached the end?
Well, Lee, if he was, I mean, he was a physical threat. Look, the Australian Survivor, I've always said, this is why Abby was my winner pick preseason. It's like, it's going to favor more beta styles of play. That's why Luke made himself into Jericho. If any season is going to have, like, an alpha type win of Australian Survivor, it's this season because of who we got to the merge with. I mean, they kind of, I think because of a lot of the strength based challenges, which was unfortunate, but they did get rid of a lot of the, you know, beta type players, some of the athletes as well. So they happen to get a lot of the very strategic, out in front, crazy players to the merge. The odds now are probably higher than ever that a big game player will win. In saying that, I do think a more subtle player would win. I'd put my money on that, but I this would be the one season where maybe an alpha player will win Australian Survivor.
Yeah, it's too much of a war of attrition. It's interesting that the more aggressive game players seem to, for whatever reason, that they kind of dominate the pre-merge of Australian Survivor. And, you know, had Russell Hantz just played his idol,
he'd be out the next week. Yeah.
he seems like the kind of person who in these Australian Survivor pre-merge is like, oh, what? He found another idol. Russell did it again. Like, it seemed like it was all queued up for him to have been able to potentially gone on one of these runs that we see, like, a Harry or a David go on in, you know, 8K at the height of his powers.
Not where, even how did Russell he made up a fake kid. That's where we're at. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it seems like that the pre-merge of Australian Survivor is almost designed for these aggressive players to do well and dominate the pre-merge. But it's such a war of attrition where to survive the whole post-merge that eventually their numbers are going to come up, and where in the U.S. Survivor, I think that they've sort of done things where, you know, there's so many idols in the post-merge, where in the final four fire making challenge, like things are seem to be, you know, built in for, you know, this type of aggressive gameplay to get to the end and win. I don't see it happening on Australians. Or, you know, it's you know, you're so far into the game. Like, these people are so exposed from all of the big games that they've had to play for the first 30 days of the game. Like, everybody knows where everybody else is coming from. You can't you really can't have, you know, laid low and then turn it on around like day 45. So I do think that we're destined to see somebody who has not played a game out in front as much go on to win again.
Yeah, I would agree. I just...
In a final seven.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Luke made it 49 days in his first season, and he came seventh. Yeah. So, I mean, we've only seen one vote of the merge, and we did get a louder, more bombastic player go than a lot of the people we saw in the pre-merge. So if that trend continues, I think it'll depend. It'll also depend on, obviously, the idols and stuff. But that, as you said, that doesn't really carry you through the end at all the way it does in US Survivor. So, yeah, I think that the odds are higher than usual, but not enough that I would think that. I don't know what alpha type player. I don't think an alpha type player is going to win.
Everybody's on the jury and do a final seven and let everybody vote.
I think I once did a wand off about that nightmare, that collective nightmare of what Survivor would become. If it would make Luke win, I'm a fickle person, you know.
This is our best bet.
All right, last question. James Boss asks, would David be better off lying that he doesn't have an idol or fessing up to it when they get back to camp now that Andy has thrown him under the bus?
I think that the best thing in David's favor is the Andy reputation of it's just say, why would I tell Andy anything? I definitely don't have if I had an idol, the last person I would tell is Andy. And that checks out.
Now
nobody
I trust
would tell
more
Andy
that you don't
anything.
Have an idol. Like, now that he's said,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that is the best. I think that's the way that he should play this. Like if I had an idol, the last person on earth I would tell is Andy. It's just Andy. It's just another one of Andy's lies. Andy's a liar and he's mad at me. And so he's just trying to burn me and everybody that checks out.
Yeah, but if anyone could rally against anyone, it is Andy, unfortunately. And you're about to cut to an ex interview where we talk about some of that. But Rob, we've reached the end of talking about, for me, 3 episodes of Australian Survivor. For you, what has been 14 episodes in pretty much as many hours of watching. I really appreciate that you did that. That you watched so much of the season to come on. Like, you might as well finish the season now because it's pretty much over.
Yeah. Well, I can't say necessarily I will finish the season. But I have to see, you know, how this plays out for Luke and for David. if those two guys get voted off in the next week, I'm not necessarily sure I'll finish the season. But I have to, you know, finish out this ride.
Well, how far do they need to get for you to finish? Like, if Luke comes like fifth and there's like 3 episodes left, are you finishing it? Like, then how long do they need to make it?
I mean, Luke's in the finale. I probably won't turn off the show.
The finale is the final 3. So you're going to watch Final Tribal Council if he gets voted out 3rd.
Yeah. So
good to know.
If he gets voted out in 3 votes or
if he makes it to the final 3.
Yeah, I'll finish watching the episode.
If he makes it to the final 4?
To the final 3.
Will you watch the final finale 4. If he makes it to the final 4?
I'll probably, you know, read about what happens and then people tell me.
You're such a casual. Dude, honestly,
yeah.
You sound like my dad. My dad also will turn it off when Luke gets voted out.
Yes, I also have said that I'm going to watch next week's Bachelor in Paradise. And Shannon, you know, I'm very much invested in this Big Brother 21 also that's going on. So there's a lot going on.
You've committed to some pretty silly things. Like,
yeah, you know. So. And yeah, I wasn't necessarily counting on the Mets getting back into contention also. There's been, you know, a lot. I also have a family, you know.
a family that you've thrown well under the bus on this podcast.
Right. Right. You know, you got Harry out there who's pretending he has a family. The only way I can accomplish anything is to pretend I don't have a family. You know, I'm very jealous of all these childless people that are out there like yourself that are able to, you know, accomplish things.
Yeah, you told me in my proposal video not to have kids. So it's a running theme. Look, I'm going to send Nicole the 5-minute clip of you mocking her on the podcast. Then you won't have a family and then you can finish Australian Survivor. So
if you think Nicole will then take 5 minutes to listen to a clip that you have pulled,
3 minutes,
you are sorely mistaken.
How much time?
Do you think Nicole is interested enough in what I have to say to listen to a 5-minute clip and not tune out 9 seconds in? You are crazy. Like, maybe at best, maybe if you could like made like a gif of and then printed the words out where she didn't have to actually stop and hit play, maybe you might be able to get a message to her.
We really need the voice, but I mean, your marriage is indestructible just based on, I think, Nicole's lack of care about what is happening. So great marriage advice like we got in our proposal video. But what is the hashtag?
Oh, no, I want to keep exploring this, Shannon. I think that the biggest, what is it? What time is it now for you? 3 a.m.?
2:15.
Yeah, I think that the biggest concern International Survivor as a whole and International Survivor fans should have is that Shannon Gates might decide, you know, I'm going to start planning a family.
No, no, this is my baby. They call me the pod mother now. I love that. Yes. But I want Perfume Scorpion if I can, but I will take
everybody. The International Survivor fans should help. Like Shannon Gates does not see like cute babies anywhere that really interrupt all of the International Survivor podcasting schedule.
I would have to plan my family around the international podcasting. Is that why you told me not to have kids? Are kids delightful and you just wanted to keep me on board? Is that what it was?
At times, but you know, I'm not going to lie that they really do throw things all, you know, it's very difficult. They ask your podcasting partner, Mike Bloom, that they throw a monkey wrench into podcasting.
I mean, Mike's not missed an episode of South Africa yet. I mean, he missed the preseason and I know it hurt him to do it, but he's been on now for 14 full weeks. So like if Mike can do it, I probably can't. Mike is like, I don't know how Mike does it. I mean, he is just, he's crazy. He does so many things with a baby, but I mean, I think you underestimate, Rob, or maybe you don't underestimate how much of my life depends on this podcast. So
and Angela Bloom being a saint.
Yes. Yes. Thank God for the Blooms. But all right, it really is 2:17. But again, this is my life. And what is the hashtag? I have hashtag bias stress. That was a good one. Hashtag lady bulge purse. That was a late one.
Like, that was the one I like.
I want, yeah, hashtag. No, we're not going to just do hashtag John's butt. That was a bad one. But I think hashtag bias stress or lady bulge purse. Which one is?
I prefer Lady Bulge first. Also, everybody should have known that Harry could not be trusted when he was showing up on Survivor with a Washington Nationals baseball hat. What? What?
Way over my head.
Where did that come from? Why is Harry wearing a hat of the Washington Nationals baseball team?
Okay, that's baseball. All right. Australians are weird. We don't know what we're doing. We just, I mean, I have an NBA cap. What is it? The Dallas Mavericks? Why? Why do I have that cap? I don't know who they are. I don't know anything about that team. I don't go outside or wear caps, and yet I own that cap. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of references to American sports. I think that.
Yeah. Michael Jordan a lot.
Michael Jordan, and they talked about, did David talk about them being like LeBron and so. Yeah, I don't know how much American sports like. Of course, there's a lot of footy talk on Australian Survivor, but sometimes they just drop a U.S. sports reference.
Yeah, you know, Australia's just like our lives revolve around America. You know, we're very tuned into what America is doing. You know, unlike what you guys are doing with Australia, but I guess you are all watching Australian Survivor, so
yes,
maybe
we
those
all
are the references. Finally, we're the focal point. 3 nights a
finally.
Week.
You made it. You made it.
All right. It's so late. Rob, what is happening I'm having the best time. But Rob, what is happening in the RHAP world? You're my guest on this podcast. You get to plug your other podcast.
Okay. Well,
take it to 2K.
I have done a Bachelor in Paradise podcast. I got to watch it. Do you know what Bachelor in Paradise is?
So I was obsessed with it for like 3 seasons. Not going to lie. I had to tune out because it takes over your life, The Bachelor. And it's like once you watch one season, then someone who's been a contestant on that season is now the new Bachelor or Bachelorette. So you keep like, you keep getting drawn in. Then Ari was The Bachelor and I'd never watched his season because he was a few years ago. And I was like, I'm free. And I never went back. So I can't go back to that. But I mean, yeah. I like Bachelor in Paradise. It's the best of the franchises, I think. Super trashy, and that's fine.
Yes. Do you think that should Survivor, and Survivor takes itself so seriously, like of all of the reality TV franchises, Survivor, you know, treats itself with the most gravitas of any of, and it's not even close, that Survivor is like a life-changing experience. I guess the Bachelor, you know, trades in a little bit of like, no, this is about finding love, and does at times get serious, but also gets, you know, very silly with all like the limo entrances and stuff like that. So this is sort of them going there. But could you have ever imagined like some sort of like Survivor off-season spin-off of like, hey, let's take all of our like wacky pre-merge characters and do something with them. Like, could you ever imagine Survivor doing something like that?
But what is that? Like, what is it if not Survivor?
It's not Survivor, but it's like some sort of like kooky, you know, Survivor type game where maybe, you know, they build up characters like, and it's like they have Fiji. Okay. So they bring them, out to Fiji, and it's not necessarily, Survivor, but maybe it's like a week long of some sort of, I don't know, like accelerated version of Survivor or, like Bachelor in Paradise is like kind of the Bachelor game, but is, a little different.
Bachelor in Paradise, though, like they should just play Bachelor in Paradise. Like that's the most strategic of the Bachelor shows. There's some actual strategy. I mean, especially in Australia, it's just a lot of strategy there. Yeah. People trying to get roses. Yeah, so maybe they should just do Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like that is, you know, all these different like first boots and like people that maybe aren't necessarily in the running to be in a regular season, but you know, you bring back like Reem and Natalie. That's Cole,
this is what this was. You're like, how can we get Reem back on? You're like, we're gonna have to make it a Bachelor in Paradise type thing.
Like, I feel like that if they wanted, I know that they have Big Brother, but if they ever wanted to sort of like, you know, fill a month on the schedule of, could they do some sort of a, you know, Survivor spinoff that would be easy to do? I think that a Bachelor in Paradise type model would be interesting.
I think it's just like film Hearts of Reality. That's what you're referring to.
I don't know if that's what Hearts of Reality is.
That's what it seems to be for me on Instagram. Bachelor in Paradise for Survivor players.
A notable cause, yeah.
What else in the podcast world?
So Bachelor in Paradise is going to be on that. Got a ton of Big Brother stuff happening. So be on the lookout for all of that. And then, you know, just so much talking with T-Bird. We talked to Roger Bingham the other day, and so that was very fun to talk to Kentucky Joe. And I have not announced this yet, but my next Talking with T-Bird interview is coming up tomorrow, and we will be talking with Amy Cusack of Survivor Vanuatu and Survivor Fans versus Favorites fame.
I love that, the Ice Queen. That's brilliant. Yes. T-Bird, she really gets them. She really just nails it.
Yeah, that my interaction with T-Bird is, I'm going to make the analogy of that, that T-Bird is my John's butt of people I talk to. Talk to T-Bird more than any other person.
Mike Bloom is my John's butt. Yes. Now that's the thing. That really should be the hashtag.
Yeah, let us know what your John's butt is. What is the thing? What is the thing that you do or see more than any other person?
Australian Survivor is my John's butt. John's butt is my John's butt. I don't have a life outside of the show. All right. Well, I'll plug my things. Survivor South Africa marches on week 15. As we go into episode 15 of Australian Survivor. So last week we had Liana Boris. Next week, as I said, my John's butt. It'll just be me and Mike. This is...
Yes.
It's very late. And next week...
It's been good. It's been a good season, Survivor South Africa.
Yeah, it's really different. It's like a slower season. It's super invested in the characters. It got a little dark last week. That was kind of fun to talk about. It's just this, like, Australian Survivor is like all the time and so fast, and it's like frenetic, and it's almost like the opposite of South African Survivor, which like gives you time to digest and is,
yes,
it's just a very different, like, pretty much everyone's getting airtime. That's a bit of a different thing as well. So they're almost polar opposite seasons, but I think both very worthwhile. Yeah, and next week on the Australian Survivor podcast, we have Liana Boris. So now Liana's becoming nice. My John's butt, because I'm speaking to her all the time as well. If it was not 2:30, would I be saying John's butt as much as I am? Because now I
probably
can't stop.
Not.
Yeah, so we have to end the podcast because it's...
it'll be extra awkward if John gets voted out and you have an exit interview with him.
Well, what a great segue, because that'll be like my least awkward exit interview ever. You guys want to hear me be a rambling, awkward mess while people who listen to the podcast tell me that they know I don't like them, then boy, do I have a treat for you.
Because I'm so happy that you're having that experience. because it's an experience that I know and understand.
It's not Mike White levels. They were all lovely. I mean, I feel like the worst person in the world. They were lovely.
You know what, Shannon? And I just feel like you, I listen to the podcast, and I just, you don't like me. Okay? Why do you talk about my butt all the time?
And talk about these people's butt. I don't think John is going to listen to the podcast. I definitely don't think he's over 2 hours in.
Are you a fan of John? Yeah. Do you like Mexican Parma? Yeah.
I can't even deal with your imitation of that. I don't know how you handled that. I literally had that thought while doing. I'm like, exit interview is very hard. How did Rob handle that Mike White exit interview? I mean, look, you have experience, but. Well, tough stuff.
The worst somebody could be on an exit interview is boring and indifferent. Heat is great. You want somebody coming in hot. That's much better than who is this? Do I have to be here? I'd rather have somebody come in hating me than somebody coming in and not wanting to be there.
I've had both. So
yes.
They were really nice. In fact, they're coming up in 2 minutes, I assume.
Okay.
So
all right.
So everyone will get this up themselves.
Before you get to the exit interviews, let me just also mention our Rob is a Podcast Patreon, where we have a whole community of people that love Survivor as much as you do. If you are 2.5 hours into an Australian Survivor recap,
with exit interviews to check come. Out. So.
Yes. Everything that we have going on over at robhasawebsite.com/patron or go to patreon.com/RHAP.
Yes. I mean, if you want to find people talking about all this ridiculousness from Survivor all over the world, like this is your place. If you're an ultra fan, that's the place to be. But until then, also subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed so you don't miss any of the International Survivor podcasts, the reality TV or Hap-Ups feed. It's all there as well. Rob, thank you so much for coming on, watching so much Survivor to do this. And I really appreciate you being here. And it was super fun as always. But I am going to throw it to my exit interviews with Matt and with Ross and with Andy. Until then, tell us what your John's butt is. Hashtag Lady Bulge Purse. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And I will throw it now to those ex interviews.
Thanks, Shannon.
Bye. Matt, thank you so much for coming on to Rob Has a Podcast. Really tough position, obviously, with the swap, but we'll be keen to get some of your insights into your game.
Of course.
So obviously we saw a lot of you in the challenges, so I wanted to get, you know, more of a strategic insight, and I think we really did get to see that a lot in the last couple of episodes, but kind of taking it back to the beginning, who did you consider your main allies on the Contenders Beach? The original Contenders.
I think early on I was kind of seeing what was going on, and because we won so many immunity challenges, it was really hard to have a concrete knowledge of who's going where, because until you vote, you don't know who's with you, but early on, I was definitely in there with probably Sean, Daisy, and John. They were probably the ones I was closest to, and the ones that I probably would have voted for, or sorry, voted with in that early stage if we had to go.
Right, and obviously we saw you push for Baden from what we were seeing on TV over Laura. Why were you so staunchly pro-Laura in that vote?
Yeah, I think at that stage, I really liked Laura, and I had some good chats with her, and I thought she was someone I could definitely play with. And early on, the challenges were completely strength-based, so you just make the assumption that it's always going to be like that. So I was like, get rid of Baden, I need him gone. And Baden, when you first meet Baden, he can be like that annoying little brother. I ended up really liking Baden, but at first I was just like, oh, let's just get rid of him. And you also, like, everyone says they want to win Survivor, but everyone's initial goal is to not get voted out, you know, first from their tribe. So I think it was the kind of thing where I was like, let's just get rid of him and try to take some of the shine off me and make sure that wasn't me that was gone.
Yeah, but as you said, you know, you ended up liking him. So did your relationship with Baden kind of improve after what seemed like kind of a public battle for you to get him out of the game?
Very much so. Very much so. I think if you see the first episode, oh, sorry, I think it was the second episode, we came back to tribal after he did that speech, and the speech resonated with me. I thought it was absolutely awesome, and I kind of took him under my wing. I wish they showed it more. I actually gave the name the undercover arsehole as a bit of a joke, and bad boy Baden, and I wanted to kind of give him some of what I had in the sense that, you know, that confidence, and because he's such an amazing dude, he's so talented in certain ways, I wanted him to be like, yeah, I'm great, and I think, honestly, I think I did rub off on him a little bit and gave him some of that attitude that he has shown briefly in some of the later episodes. He's a great kid, man. I'm glad I got to meet him out there.
And I'm so glad we've indirectly found out the origin of undercover assholes. So thank you for that.
Yeah, because he's trying to claim it. I want to make sure that I get the credit. I came up with that one.
Okay, well, if you had gone back to a tribal council, you know, obviously really hard to say, you can't say for sure, but who do you think would have been next on the chopping block at the original Contenders Beach?
You never know, but I think realistically, it's hard because I know there was kind of two groups. There was the ones that they were like the top dogs per se, and then there was a group of like Harry, Casey, Andy, and Sammy in the middle who were very influential. And I know Sammy really wanted Daisy gone, especially because of her relationship with Sean. So that was one. So it could have been Daisy. Otherwise, I think challenge-wise, it was probably going to be Hannah.
Right. And so kind of moving to the swap tribe, you know, you're talking about, obviously you had Sean there, you said you were tight with him, and then John and Daisy were on the other side, but who were the major connections that you felt you had at the swap?
At the swap, I think me and Harry were tight at, so I knew that was close, and with Sean as well at the swap, Casey I thought was a wild card. I knew that she was all over the place, you know, she was going to vote with whoever was going to get it through. I actually got along quite well with the champion. It was so tough to get into that alliance, though. They were rock solid, and they knew they had a guaranteed trip to the merge if they stayed together. But, you know, me and Roscoe had a lot of fun, and I thought I could convince him to do something crazy, because he does love to do crazy things, but it wasn't to be, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, how close do you think you were to actually flipping the boys in the episode we saw last night? I mean, Janine played her idol, so it must have been somewhat convincing that you had a chance there.
Yeah, I think we were closer than most people think. I think Simon knew that was the right move, but it is what it is. He made the decision that day, and in the end, it's a smart play. That's what he said last night. He's like, in the end, you're going to be good at some of the individual challenges. So for him, he made a smart play, but I was just worried about those three girls because Tia, Abby, and Janine are so extremely tight. I don't know how anyone can get through that, and I'm very interested to see if anyone can break that bond at all.
Yeah, I mean, how were you working out that someone like Simon was on the bottom, or were you just kind of looking at it like, okay, try and bond with Ross and Simon because they're not part of this really strong three that were the girls?
Yeah, you hear inklings of things while you're out there, and we heard that Simon was the next, if E.T. didn't go, Simon was going to go, you know, they were very interchangeable. But I knew Simon was at the bottom, and we got some good intel from Sean as well, because he was quite close with Simon about him being at the bottom, so we just tried our best to take advantage of that situation, and Simon knew he was at the bottom. He would never admit it at Tribal. The champions are so political at Tribal that they never admit anything, Simon knew he was next to go, so we tried a bit. And Ross goes a wild card. You never know what Ross is going to do at any stage, not just in the game, but just in life. So it was very hard to read him.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said, really, really tough position with the swap. I was really impressed with what you and Harry were doing, just kind of throwing everything at the wall. And you tried so hard last night, and you, I think, you know, got further than you should have with the position that you were in. But talking about the vote before, where Casey went home, obviously you write down Harry's name. We hear you say that, you know, you expect him and you want him to play the idol. So I understand why you did that, but was there kind of, did you think about voting for Casey to try and pile votes there so that Harry could keep the idol, or were you just going to go with what the champions wanted to try and maintain that bond?
It was a difficult situation to be in because you never know what everyone's going to vote for, and we were worried that, you know, I wanted to guarantee Harry was there because I think me and Harry both realised we were the only two lifelines we had. For us to survive, we had to be together. So as much as we would have loved him to keep the idol and things like that, you just never know in Survivor what's going to happen. So I kind of went out on a limb and I told him all day, play your idol, play your idol. Don't trust Casey. You need to play it for you. And then I voted him because it wouldn't count. And I showed the champions that I could be trusted. And I just wanted a way to kind of give myself a position in the game if there was another trouble where I should be okay. Unfortunately, Harry, being a sneaky guy, he found another idol, and my plan didn't end up working. Because if he didn't have the idol, I stay around. Mm-hmm. The champions trust me.
Yeah. So you were up against a lot. And obviously, as well, one thing that didn't go your way was that one of your main allies, Sean, was stolen to the other tribe. Oh. You had a pretty vocal reaction to that. So where was the main disappointment coming from? Like, what did you want them to do is the first thing, and who were you mostly disappointed in for that move?
I think the frustration was, you know, we did so well in the immunity challenges that we built a four-person lead over the champion. So I'm like, this is great. Somehow I get stitched up in the tribe swap and I'm actually down. We work out a plan and we think we can get rid of Janine or Abby, two of the biggest players, because we have Harry's idol. And then all of a sudden there's, you know, in Survivor you never know what's coming next, and now Sean's gone. And I get why they voted Sean. He's an absolute beast and he had connections over there. I think the frustration was just like not having the game in my own hand. Like there was nothing I could do. And once Sean was gone, now we're down by two people. Like there was no way to kind of survive, I feel. I feel in some ways I was running out of options.
Right. And do you think that was the best move for someone like, you said, a close ally like a Daisy or a John? For obviously it's worked for them that they've been able to win more challenges now with Sean, but they did doom someone like you who's an ally. So do you feel like they should have maybe taken a champion, or do you understand the move from their perspective?
Oh, if I was on their team, I vote Sean too. And the thing is, they didn't have time to, legitimately, as soon as they said you guys are voting, they went out and started voting. So there was no time to discuss or really think. You've got maybe 30 seconds to a minute to work out who you're voting for. And if you're put on the spot there, I'm voting for Sean. You know, you don't really think all the ins and outs, but now that the show's aired, you're like, you can think of 50 different ways. At the time, they just made the smart move, and I get it.
Right, yeah. I mean, you also were disappointed to kind of hear rumors that the champions were throwing challenges. This might be a hard one to ask you, but I don't know if you had any indication. Did you feel like the champions were throwing last night's challenge when you went home as well, or do you feel like they legitimately wanted to win that challenge?
Yeah, I'm just such a competitive person. I get it. It's Survivor gameplay, but it's just, I think that's, like, I'd be willing to lie and cheat, but I could never throw a challenge. And I don't think they threw the one last night. I think, honestly, they wanted to get rid of Casey. And I think me and Harry, they realised we were assets, and they would have loved to keep us around, because me and Harry, as close as we were to the former contenders who went across, we were open. We were willing to work with whoever we needed to get further. So I really don't think Pia threw that challenge last night. I think she tried her best, and Baden is just a puzzle god, and he just smashed the puzzle even though Andy did nothing. So I think it was all above board last night.
Yeah, that's a really great insight, because from us, you know, to not hear them kind of get an insight into what they were thinking after they'd thrown the last challenge was confusing, but I totally see that point as well. And talking more about the challenges, obviously you had a pretty strong challenge rivalry with Luke. You didn't actually get to play with him, but was it kind of all on the court, or do you feel like even beyond that, you guys would have had like a strong rivalry going through the entire game?
See, it's hard to tell. I really wish that I had the opportunity to play with Luke, because I think it would have been a lot of fun. I think we both realized that it was part of the challenge. I think a little people were upset. I think I've listened to your podcast. I know you're not the biggest fan of the way I acted at certain stages, and I get it. You don't have to like me, but it was part of the fun of being out there. You know, I think me and Luke just loved going against each other and having that rivalry. It was just fun. Obviously, if we did merge, he probably would have tried to get me out and I would have tried to get him out. Or we could have worked together. But I think realistically, it was all in good fun.
Yeah, I mean, just to comment on my part in that, like, I think it was a bit upsetting to kind of see that one-dimensional side, you know, and it was entertaining, yeah, definitely, all of the physical stuff, but it was only the last couple of episodes that we were really seeing your strategic chops as well. So I guess I wish we got a bit of a more rounded out edit, and now actually getting to chat to you, like, I can see there's a really different side than the competitive challenge person. As someone who does no exercise, it's not really a vibe that I can really understand, but I love getting to see, you know, this other side of you, and we know that you're a teacher as well. So what did your students think of watching you on the show and seeing the side of you on the show?
It's been really interesting going back to school. The first few days when I came back, I'd walk through the playground and I'd just hear, "Champions, eh?" And they'd all be yelling, and because they've actually all loved it. And I think I've converted a lot of the kids to being big Survivor fans, and their families as well. The mums and dads love to chat to me about it. So most of my lessons now, after the episode airs, there's probably 10, 15 minutes of them asking me questions. Why did you vote this way? Oh, how is this person? Is John as funny in real life? So I spend half my time talking about the show, but it's good that I get to kind of give my love of Survivor onto the next generation. And I think they all talk about wanting to go on it now. So that made me really happy.
Yeah. I mean, what was your history with the show? Were you a really big fan before you went on, or more of a recent fan?
I'm a massive Survivor fan. You know, for well over a decade, I've always been a big fan in that. And I think I've spoken as well. The Challenge from the States is another reality show that's somewhat similar. And I really love both of them. Unfortunately, I missed the first two seasons of Australian Survivor because I was overseas. But I didn't. The thing was, you know, you got someone like Andy, who's his whole thing is I'm a Survivor fan. But I think I'm a lot more than that. But I definitely do still appreciate the game and understand all the ins and outs. Unfortunately, I think because we won so many immunities, I didn't really have to do too much. And I was pretty much safe every tribal except the last one where I kind of got stitched up. So, but I'm definitely a massive fan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to have had this chance to talk to you. I'm a fellow Space Jam enthusiast like you. I love that confessional. I love getting to see, you know, more of your strategic game as well. So really, in all honesty, like, I wish I'd been able to see more of that. But, I mean, I've really enjoyed watching these last few episodes, and I really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
No, anytime. I do listen to your podcast, I'll admit it, and I very much enjoy when you talk about me. Even if it's not always the nicest things, I get it, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, if I wasn't doing those kind of things, maybe I would have been Hannah and they didn't show me at all. So it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, like, look, I feel like you have a really good trash talking brand. So if you're saying that I can kind of bring it with the trash talking, I feel like that's like a really good endorsement from you.
Definitely. Yeah, no. This is a massive endorsement.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It was great to chat to you.
No worries. Thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Bye.
Hi, Sharon.
Ross, thank you so much for coming on to Rob Has a Podcast. I'm so happy to be talking to you, but I'm also so sad to be talking to you. This is not right.
No.
You should not be here.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm here. It's what it is.
Oh, okay. Well, you seem to be doing better with it than I am. I know you've had more time to process it, but I really just did not want to be speaking to you today.
I've had months to process this. So, yeah, it wasn't that easy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just want to, you know, get into a bit about the injury before we get into your game at large. But so what kind of happened after what we saw? Obviously, you're taken away. They end up saying you can't stay in the game. Was there ever any thought that maybe you could continue?
Yeah, for me, I thought, you know what, I could just tell them I can, you know, I couldn't really walk. So I said, you know what, it's just, I mean, I couldn't fake the diagnosis from the doctors. So I couldn't say, you know, they said it was a broken ankle, So I'm out of the game. And they sort of determined that for me. But I thought, hang on, just give it some time. You know, I could have got a second opinion or, but, you know, by that stage, I was like, just get me out of here. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But when I thought about it, I went, hang on, if I stayed in tribal council and I could do that, at least do that, I mean, it would have changed the game because, you know, it would have changed everything, really. If I voted Harry out, or, I mean, Janine was trying to get Simon out, I'm like, whoa, and everything was going a bit weird when I left. But, yeah, I was going for Harry, no doubt about it.
Right, so and if you'd been able to vote, then they could have, you know, had better champion numbers, even if they had to take you out early in the merge because of your injury, at least you could have, you know, helped those numbers.
Yeah, that's what I would have done. I mean, if I didn't, I was going for Harry. And then Janine and was trying to go get Harry to merge with us, so I was like, nah, I wasn't into it.
Right. Well, I mean, that brings me to the question I think everyone wants to know, which is, what is your obsession with Harry's dirty socks? This running theme we see in the show.
The obsession was that it was not an obsession because I burnt my own socks in the fire. I had no socks. I had an infected toe. So I just needed anyone's socks. So anyone was had an inkling of getting voted out, I'd just say, can I have your socks? That was my answer. So I said that to everyone. Steve Bradbury, when he was leaving, I said, you know, he's asked me, can I, you know, is there any way I could get through? I said, no, just give me your socks now.
A true sock bandit.
Yeah, it was a running joke for me. You know, they only use it once, but kind of made some people happy.
Well, you finally got your sock on the way, you know, out the door, which is kind of ironic and sad, I think.
No, it's kind of weird. Like, it was, you know, I got the socks, I wore the socks, and that's when I broke my ankle.
Yeah.
I was like, they'll teach you, smart ass. I'm like, but
Harry might have cursed those socks. Like, knowing Harry as I do now, he may have cursed those socks.
He cursed those socks, or I don't know, he could have tampered with the rope, or he's that good. He could have done, you know, a little explosive in the rock. I don't know what, in the rope, or I don't know, because he went just before me, I think, or.
Oh my God.
I can't remember who.
What a conspiracy theory.
No, I haven't really.
I want to take it to, you know, back to the beginning of the game. So the Sporty Seven, you know, obviously were one of the two to initially flip on them. So why the flip at the beginning?
Okay. So when they started this seven, and it didn't come to a couple of days in, and I only heard it from Susie, right, the camera. So I didn't trust her anyway. I'm like, what's happening? All of a sudden, she was like, Ross, you're in the seven, da 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 da. I was like, whoa, what's this seven thing, you know? I was included, but I was suspect on it. And I was like, why didn't Steve or E.T. come to me personally? And, you know, like, come on, guys, you could have told me. So I put it to them, like, on camera, going, whose idea was this? Yours, Steve, or E.T.'s, you know? And they wouldn't look at me in the eye. I was like, yeah, look at me in the eye, shake on it, and I'll go with you guys. And they wouldn't shake on it. They wouldn't look at me in the eye. I went, no, I'm over this. So they didn't play that, but the way it played out, it looked like Steve told me first, which wasn't true. So that's where I was, like, skeptical. I wasn't into the Susie, the Novas, and they weren't like, hang on, these guys know each other. And I just, and Abby and I was just like, I'm not sure about this. And she was the same as me. And I told them straight up, I'm not voting Janine out. They're trying to get Janine out. I went, no, I'm not voting Janine. I'm voting Susie. And that's what I'm doing.
What was it about your relationship with Janine that meant you weren't going to vote her out?
Well, Janine was like, I was just enjoying her company. It wasn't about, it was a relationship. She was really, fun to be with, and like a joy to be with. And like talking all sorts of stuff. And we were the same age, but different, you know, obviously different occupations. But yeah, I found it very interesting. And she just said, well, don't vote me out. And I was like, well, you know, my word is good. I won't vote you out. So I went with that. And I said, look, I can't vote Janine out because of my word's gold. At this stage, I was trying to build trust with everybody. So my word was good. So they thought I was a loose cannon anyway. So I run with that. You know, so this guy's crazy, but he's a man of his word.
Yeah.
So that's what I was doing. And that's at the start. Like, I was included with it, but I wasn't sure of it. But then I was sure with Luke and Dave, they came up to me and, like, pitching to me. I'm like, nah, yeah, I want to be with these guys. So they would look at me in the eye and I looked genuine. Like E.T. and Steve were just like scurrying around the forest like so suspect. Mm-hmm. I couldn't trust them. I couldn't trust them. I was like, hey, Steve, just look at me in the eye, please. He couldn't do it. Like the first boat, hang on, what was the first boat? I went with it, the very first boat with Anastasia, because that changed. It was originally Pia. Everyone's saying boat for Pia. I'm like, what? Why? Okay, whatever, I'll go with it because I wasn't sure what was happening. But I was included in the majority, so I thought that's a good thing, right? I'll just go with it. Then all of a sudden it's changed to Anastasia. And I was like, what? Okay, I'll just go with it for now, but I really didn't trust this thing. So I only went with it to the first boat.
So then going to the swap, Matt and Harry obviously do try to flip you, you know, enough so that Janine plays her idol. Was it ever realistic that you might have gone with them, or you were just champion strong?
No, the only reason I think that Janine played her idol, because I found it. And no one knows this. I found her idol, like when I was trying to lie down on the in the shelter, and I banged my head on it, so it was in some black, there's black jumpers everywhere, and I was like, whoa, what was that? It was like a rock, and I felt it, and it was one bag, so I was technically didn't steal it, but I looked at it, and it was in her jacket, unzipped, everything, and I looked at it, and went, oh, that's all. So I just chucked it in the bush, right? But then I owned up to it, because I didn't know whose it was. And when I saw Janine and Abby come back, look scouring to look for the idol, I go, wow, these guys know about it. So they're hiding something from me, you know. And I was like, okay, who do I trust now? I didn't know what to do. So I went and told Janine, I gave it back to her. I said, look, I took it, but I didn't know why. But why did you? Why are you leaving me out of this? And it sort of, anyway, Janine thought I was a loose cannon too, so she's like, my God, let's play it.
Yeah.
I was never considering going with Harry and Matt, no. But even the girl, I got the girl sort of like worried, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Ross could go anyway, you know what I mean? But that's what I always wanted to be, like to have the choice to go where I wanted. And I was sort of successfully doing that. I mean, they could have voted me out as the wild card guy. Just get rid of Ross. He just doesn't know what he's doing, but he could flip at any time. But I was actually loyal to the girls, for sure.
Yeah, and the girls have this plan with you guys a few episodes ago of throwing the challenge, which you do when Casey goes home. Were you throwing any challenges after that? Because obviously the intention seemed to be to get rid of Harry.
I didn't throw any challenges. I was sitting out of that challenge, but I knew they were going to throw it. And it's like, God, guys, make it look pretty sus to me. Did it look sus to you?
Well, I knew that they were throwing it, so it's a bit difficult when you know that's what they're trying to do. But I was surprised that it then seemed like you guys weren't throwing challenges after you take Casey out. So, you know, in that challenge where Andy's throwing it, for example, was there any idea to throw it then? And if not, why not?
Yeah, but we were trying to throw it so the other boys didn't get voted out, the other side, you know, from Dave and Luke, because they were in the minority. They were like, if we beat them, they're going to go home. So we didn't know if they had idols or not. You know? So that was like, well, let's get rid of Casey and Matt, the other contenders, so that we can make the merge and go back to the champions tribe with Luke and Dave.
Right. But then I guess my question is, were you throwing it after the initial challenge we saw you throw when Casey went home? Were you attempting to throw the, like when Matt went home, did you throw that challenge or did you just authentically lose that challenge?
No way. It was in the mud. It was the one when Matt, it was the mud one, wasn't it? Those guys were going to throw it. They were trying to throw it. We couldn't beat them. There's no way we were going to throw it. Like Harry was on there on the puzzle making with Pia, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it was Baden and Andy. And Andy was trying to throw it. I actually didn't know that he was trying to throw it. I was like, it didn't look that way, but now it really looks that way on camera.
Obviously, when you leave, you say, go Luke, which I think, you know, was great to see as a Luke fan. So who were your, you know, best friends out there? You seem close with everyone, but who did you consider your tightest allies out there?
Pia was really tight. I mean, I could trust her, like, I could trust her. I mean, it was Abby and Janine as well. We were a group. Janine was up to something. Strategy mind's too smart for me. And I was like, but I was onto it. I was like, you can't fool me, but I don't know what it is. But Luke and Dave, if we got back together, that's what I was hoping for. We're going to just destroy the camp.
And
that's what I was hoping for.
You were part of a huge moment, obviously asking Harry at tribal council if he actually had a child. So what prompted that? What made you think he didn't have a kid?
No, because when Sean came, at the swap, he said he was suspect on Harry having a child. So I kept asking him questions about the child and his birth date and how heavy was he when he was born, and just kept pressuring him. And then he didn't falter. He did a really good act. But then off camera, I was like, mate, come on, you haven't got a kid, have you? and he said no. He told me off camera, and I went, okay, I won't let it out. But he says, I want to come clean at tribal tonight. I went, okay. So I let him go, but he wasn't going to say it. So I just prompted him to say, mate, have you really got a kid or not? and then it was out of the bag.
Yeah, what an amazing TV moment. What is your history with the show? Like, had you watched a lot of Survivor before you went out there?
I had watched zero episodes of Survivor. I had no idea what I was getting in for. And I tried to watch a few when they asked me to come on the show in, January. I didn't have much time. I was in Portugal, trying to watch the episodes. I just didn't get internet, and I was having trouble getting downloading the shows, and I actually didn't watch the whole season, but dribs and drabs of that last season, that's all I caught. I just wanted to see, how does Shane Gould win? So I was trying to fast forward it, and I mean, I had no idea what I was in for.
Yeah, I mean, look out for those ropes.
But I worked it out within 3 days. I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, I better work this out quickly,
Just a last question I'm sure our listeners really want to know. How are you now with your injury? Have you recovered well from that? Because I know, obviously, as someone who, works in, athletics and the outdoors, that must be a really horrible thing to get injured on the show.
This is the worst injury I've ever had.
Wow.
Honestly, I've broken my neck, I've broken my back, but an ankle injury, you can't go anywhere. It was the freedom, my wings were clipped. I couldn't do anything. I mean, I couldn't drive, I couldn't walk. And I did the operation a couple of months ago. So I'm still in the moon boot, and the physio is going well, but I need to get the screws out from the operation 2 months ago at the end of this month. So it's a continuing thing, and just to make it worse, I've got a DVT as well.
Oh, no.
The calf is not moving. So, yeah, it's kind of common with injuries like that, apparently. So, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. So 3 months on blood thinners. So, yeah. I don't want to get cut surfing if I could ever surf, in that 3 months, but I won't be, so.
Oh, that's horrible to hear. I'm just so sorry that this has happened. Yeah. I'm sorry that you went out like this, because I think you had a really promising post-merge in front of you, and you obviously made the show so much fun, so we all lose out because Harry put a bomb in the rope, probably, so this is just devastating.
I know, it's a shame. It's like, what I could have done after. Oh, I'm really keen on tonight's episode to watch this and see how it sort of the merge happens and what everyone's thinking. I want to see. I can't wait to see this tonight.
Yeah, well, me too, but I wish you were there. Yeah. But thank you again for coming on to talk with us. It was way too soon, but it was a joy to speak with you. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Bye.
See ya.
Shannon.
Andy, welcome to the podcast. We have so much to talk about, I feel. A lot of moves. I'm glad you're finally here to explain some of the extreme moves that you were making.
Well, it's the first time in my life that I've had a podcast nemesis, so I feel like it's going to be very interesting indeed.
Is that what we are? I don't feel like we're nemeses.
I don't know. I'm too scared to run any blog posts anymore. It's a tough crowd.
I feel like that's not what I was intending, but I'm sorry if that is the repercussion of that. Definitely keep writing the blog posts. I mean, you are a blogger, right?
Apparently, at least a fake blogger.
All right, well, let's get into the audio blog post that will be this exit interview, because I have so many questions. And one of the main ones is something that was kind of spoken about last night, but not really before that, which is that you had been lying about your Daisy vote. I mean, I have to think, you know, you were saying that Hannah had voted for Daisy. So can you paint the picture for me of what that storyline was and how much you think people were buying it?
Yeah, this was a huge storyline that obviously sort of didn't make the show in the end. So after the vote went awry, and actually while I was standing at the voting booth having to cast the re-vote, I realised I was going to have a plan for what had happened. And so I came up with the pretty obvious Hannah story. And believe it or not, people bought it for a long time. So certainly the contenders bought it. And actually, there was a quote last night, you know, about the tribe being clueless that was used, I think, in relation to the throwing the challenge. But that quote was actually about the fake Hannah vote, because that story held up for an amazingly long time. And it was only sort of around merge time that Luke and Dave started to tell the truth, to try to throw that out there as a way to kind of throw me under the bus.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so Luke, that obviously comes back last night, that vote with Luke and David. You seem to kind of realize you were not in a great position last night. At what point did you realize that you were in serious trouble, or did you think that the Daisy plan would come off?
Oh, no, not at all. No, as soon as Sean won immunity, I knew I was pretty much toast. So coming to Merge, I sort of figured / hoped that I'd have a little bit of time, because I knew Sean would be the biggest target because he's such a huge social and physical threat. And then Daisy, as his right-hand person, was likely sort of ahead of me in the chopping order as well. But it was a bit of a perfect storm in the end when Sean won immunity, and then pretty much everyone suspected, at least, that Daisy might have gotten an idol in that reward challenge. So with those two sort of off the table, I was the logical next choice.
But what about someone like Harry, who'd had like an antagonistic relationship with the champion women, especially Janine? Why do you feel like he wasn't targeted?
Yeah, I think the fact that he'd been able to spend so much time with those guys, and we saw it, I think, in the episode prior, that, you know, Janine was starting to think longer term post-merge, and, you know, someone like Harry could have been a better the devil you know scenario where she felt like she could potentially pull him in for, you know, the move that she'll no doubt have to make at some point. Whereas the, you know, Dave and Luke, you know, I'd had a very interesting relationship with, you know, for the past couple of weeks, and they probably just sort of viewed me as someone who was, maybe a threat to them specifically. And so, you know, they were pretty much kind of pulling the strings at that point, and I was, logical choice.
Yeah, take me through this relationship with Dave and Luke. I mean, it was so on-off. You're voting against each other at the beginning, then kind of working a bit together, and then kind of quasi together. So take me through that relationship and how you saw it evolve over those few days.
Yeah, well, look, from the moment I saw Luke was in the game, he was, you know, pretty much the first person I wanted to get out. The, you know, anyone who's watched the show knows how big of an advantage, you know, returning player has, you know, especially if you can make it through the first couple of votes, which, you know, the champions obviously maybe didn't realize the risk that he posed later in the game. So once you made it through, look, I sort of realized that actually a returning player, once you play the game, the advantage they have is probably five times bigger than even I thought was the case, just because of your, you know, experience with production, knowing how things work, knowing how tribal works. It's kind of massive. So So once we swapped, you know, he was a huge, huge threat. And so obviously I targeted him initially. And that, once that vote went wrong, I was, you know, stuck in a pretty hard spot, obviously, because I'd been left out of the vote by my former contenders, but had also very clearly tried to target Braden Luke. So from then on, it was a matter of essentially just trying to make, you know, whatever move was going to get me a couple of votes further, potentially, and try to get through to a merge where I could potentially sort of join up with people. But the fact that, you know, each of the other plays didn't end up working out meant that, you know, essentially I was, you know, I ended up sort of being isolated by the time we got to the merge.
Yeah, I mean, we want to talk about the challenge throw, which is obviously like a big part of all of that. Where was the disconnect with obviously Baden, even John, we kind of hear last night and also in his voting confessional, he seemed to really not be on board with the concept of challenge throwing, yeah, you know, as it is. So where was that disconnect between the contenders there?
Yeah, so Sean and I were, you know, pretty clear that we needed to throw challenges, and his job really was to try to bring the other guys on board with that. John just had a philosophical objection to it, I suppose, and look, you know, nobody goes out there wanting to throw challenges, but I think you need to sort of keep the big picture in mind that nobody's going to give you $500,000 for winning challenges. You know, you win by making it to the end, but that was just his stance in general. Baden was a more interesting one in that, you know, literally, obviously we saw the conversation at the reward challenge where, you know, Sean and Daisy, you know, seemed to agree that we needed to throw the challenge. We then had another conversation immediately before that particular immunity and agreed that, yes, we absolutely need to throw this. And then their job was to communicate that to Baden. So Baden afterwards told me, oh, yeah, I saw Daisy motioning like a ball throwing signal to me, but I wasn't sure what she meant. And then I spoke to Baden immediately before we, you know, while we were waiting for the other guys to complete the challenge and said, okay, you're cool. You know that we need to throw this. And he said, oh, is that what we're doing? Oh, gee, I don't know. And again, afterwards, he said to me, look, I was worried that if we threw it, he was worried he would get voted out, which I think is a bit of a long shot. But you know, I suppose I can't blame him. If he felt like he was at risk, then, you know, it's a risk for him to take.
Yeah, and the next immunity challenge, you're obviously sitting out, and it doesn't seem like people are trying to throw it, maybe like a Sean. So had the plan kind of changed by that point, do you think?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I was made to sit out of that challenge because everybody knew that I was definitely going to throw it.
Right.
And at that point, I mean, I know it seems crazy, but Sean... Even Sean was sort of wishy-washy on whether we should or not. And I think partially that was probably driven by the fact that he just couldn't get the other guys on board. And so he maybe felt that he would be quite exposed if he, you know, had to take on the throwing duties by himself. So it was probably mostly a function of the fact that he couldn't get John and, you know, and maybe even Daisy to some extent on board with throwing it. That meant... yeah, the guys, yeah, we just didn't get around to doing it, which, you know, might come back to bite us.
Right. And, I mean, Sean was someone who it seemed like you guys had a lot of loyalty between the two of you, even though Daisy had originally, it seemed, not liked that you had told his secret, but it seems like you guys were good. So what was that relationship like with Sean?
Yeah, we didn't see a whole lot of it out there, but we were very tight. So on the original contenders, Sean was the person that I was closest to amongst that, you know, what I think we called the alliance sort of at the top of the ladder. But then I obviously had a secondary thing going on with Harry, Sammy and Casey. And so, you know, when the tribe swap happened, it was definitely not an ideal situation because I'd lost my primary connection into that Sean, Daisy, John and Baden group, I suppose. But yeah, you know, even when we reconnected after stealing Sean, we still stayed close. And, you know, the challenge was at that point, you know, after the Daisy flip, I was in a situation where I felt like my best path forward to, you know, post-merge was actually to get Daisy out. And that was something I obviously couldn't bring him in on.
Yeah, I mean, the Daisy relationship is another fascinating one. I wrote her name down a couple of times. She voted, obviously, against you at the swap. So what was the underlying issue there that kind of, I guess, formed that disconnection that we were seeing on the TV?
Yeah, well, that, you know, at that pivotal, at that coin flip vote, you know, Daisy had always had a bit of a thing with Sammy. So, you know, there was the story that Sammy had sort of brought her name up. It kind of wasn't as explicit as that, but Daisy had heard of a conversation where Sammy had talked about voting out someone near the top, and Daisy had interpreted that to be her. And so, yeah, when we got to that swap scenario, I think Daisy, you know, always wanted to vote Sammy, and the Sean Idle thing, if anything, was sort of just you know, an additional, you know, rationale for her to be able to take that shot at Sammy that she wanted to. And I think, you know, that I had every intention of voting with Daisy and with all of the original contenders, you know, to at least get Dave and Luke out post the swap. But once that happened, there was obviously kind of a schism there that I sort of worked pretty hard to try to commend, you know, through the Sarah and, yeah, certainly through the Sarah vote, but I knew that I would never be able to execute the stuff that I wanted to execute with Sean whilst Daisy was still in the game. Because with Daisy gone, I felt like Sean could easily deliver John and Baden, and because I knew Sean and I were tight, I thought we'd be able to move forward and then hopefully reconnect with people like Harry and even Casey at that point on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Baden. He's another one I'm interested in because we talk about the challenge throw and the disconnect. He obviously turns on you at the swap as well, but we saw that you were a really big part of trying to save him in that first vote, hopefully to you know, work with him later. So how did that relationship evolve?
Yeah, Baden, because he received votes in that first vote, that actually made him very paranoid. And from then on, his sort of, you know, primary goal through the game that I saw was just to be with the numbers. So I think he realized, you know, probably correctly, that for someone like him, his best bet is to lay pretty low, you know, make it to the merge. He's unlikely to be perceived as too much of a threat in the immediate sort of post-merge phase, and can potentially sort of make it through to the end as a, you know, as a swing vote for the champions, you know, when they inevitably turn on one another. So that was sort of his motivation and driver, and it was tough to get him to, you know, move outside that strategically.
Yeah. And then moving to your final worst of the tribe last night, I know, like, pretty polarizing online of definitely, like, extreme opinions on either side of the aisle. You say that David has an idol to cause some chaos. What was running through your mind at the moment of what you were trying to achieve with that?
Yeah, it was funny. It was very much a spur of the moment thing. I think the fact that David had been working so hard to kind of throw me under the bus in that tribal with Davey and Sean, I thought he might appreciate a little bit of the same in return. So and look, David's a great player. You know, he's playing an incredible game, obviously. But you know, he's kind of been gifted a couple of idols. So I thought I might try to make it just a little bit more challenging for him to see if he can maybe turn it to his advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the idols. I definitely want to get your insight into that popcorn reward. You as a fan know you're basically sending David off to a clue or an idol in that moment. So what was running through your head in that moment?
I think you can imagine very precisely what was running through my head in that moment. But again, yeah, just a tough situation socially. So, you know, don't forget, I had literally voted or tried to vote with Dave and Luke, the tribal council prior, and was sort of, you know, attempting to maintain a potential working relationship with them if things exploded in relation to the Daisy vote. So I couldn't sort of be seen as trying to shaft them in that moment. But by the same token, I obviously would have clearly preferred a contender to get the idol. And so I was sort of, you know, making eyes to Sean to say, dude, we need to change this. And we did manage to, you know, slightly change the order to get at least Sean going before Luke, because Dave and Luke were the initial plan from Daisy and John to go first, which is kind of mind-blowing.
Andy, this is why you needed to make up, you know, a fake baby rather than a fake blog, so that when they sent the parents, you would have been going to the idol. I mean, that's just thinking about the long game and predicting that this would happen. But I'm so glad that you came on.
It's pure genius from Harry.
Yes, I mean, it ended up being actually so important. If he'd been on that tribe, it would have been actually really credible. But really glad you came onto the podcast to explain your many, many moves. I hope we're not nemesis. I hope you keep blogging about Survivor/golf, travel, whatever it is. Like, I'll be reading. So thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Shannon.
Thanks so much. Bye. Okay, everyone, there you have it. A massive recap with Rob Sestino himself. 3 exit interviews. It was a big week of Australian Survivor. So I hope you enjoyed Rob and Matt and Ross and Andy, all great guests, I thought. So glad to get them all onto the podcast. Really hope that you enjoyed this podcast. Thank you for getting to the end if you are here. Remember to subscribe to the International Survivor HapUps feed, hashtag John's Butt or Lady Bulge Purse or whatever we were doing. Thank you so much again for listening. We will see you next week with Liana Boris. Thanks again. Bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.